are merely the vessel that gets you every single piece of sports information possible. This is Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Today. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. George Russick in from 9 till noon today. I'm in all week for good show. Don't fret. J.D. Bunkus will join us at 11 o'clock on his vacation. He needs to be on the show today during his vacation. That's fine. He'll join us at 11 o'clock. Talk about those scorching, red-hot Toronto Blue Jays. We have a busy, busy show. Laura Armstrong, Blue Jays beat writer for the Toronto Star, will join us in about 20 minutes. Talk to Mark Schofield, NFL writer for USA Today at 10 a.m. Luke Fox, NHL Maple Leafs writer for Sportsnet.ca at 10:20. And as I mentioned, J.D. Bunkus will join us at 11 a.m. Producer Sam McKee on with me as well. And Blue Jays just beat up on the Rays 8-1 yesterday. And Sammy, you and I talked about how Ryan Yarbrough has always had the Blue Jays number. It must have been an even more special night for you specifically, because you said yesterday, oh man, he always has the Blue Jays number. It always sucks when Ryan Yarbrough pitches against the Jays, and his ERA was below 250 in his career against Toronto. Was that extra satisfying for you? They got lit up like a Christmas tree last night?
Definitely. And he's got that face that he's just, I don't know, there's something about it. Maybe it's just because he dominates the Jays, but he's got a hateable face to me.
Is it hateable or punchable? What's the difference?
I think it's a combo. I don't know. Okay. I'm not going to try to combine those words on air and make a fool of myself, but he's got a combo of those faces.
Yeah, he definitely was struggling last night, and the Blue Jays continue to do stuff that we just haven't seen. And when you look at what the Toronto Blue Jays have done, you look at the standings just 2.5 weeks ago. Blue Jays, end of August, were like 6.5 games back of a wild card spot. And we wake up this morning, they're in the number one wild card spot after going a remarkable 15 out of 17 games. And what's the thing we were saying the whole time when you talk about playoff percentages and what the Blue Jays need to do and what their record needs to be? All those things are coming to fruition. It is just, it's surreal watching this team right now, how incredibly well they are crushing the baseball. And the Blue Jays are just, I said it yesterday, the hottest team that goes into the postseason in Major League Baseball has a great shot at winning the World Series. I'm getting way ahead of myself because you got to win that one wild card game, because 8 games back of the Rays is too much to make up here. But at this point, who the hell knows? Are you back? Are you safe?
Okay, where did I fall off?
You were talking about how punchable Ryan Yarbrough's face was, and you didn't want to.
That's as far as I was. I was talking to no one for a long time, eh? Wow.
That's okay. It happens. Listen, we're in the middle of a pandemic. Variants are floating around. You and I are being safe by being at home. That's awesome. Sometimes these things happen. I get it. I can fill a minute when you're not there. Good God, I hope I could fill a minute hosting a radio show. But yes, eat it, Ryan Yarbrough and the Tampa Bay Rays. And what made yesterday even more special is because the Rays always have the Blue Jays number, it just felt extra. Because it's like, I don't know if there's such a thing as a measuring stick series in baseball. And obviously they still haven't won this series. Still 2 games left. Jose Berríos on the mound tonight. They win tonight. They win this series. I don't know if it legitimizes what they've been doing lately, Sam. But it's just more icing on this cake of how phenomenal this 2 weeks has been.
Yeah, like, listen, what I was saying about Yarbrough when I was talking to no one there was that when he got out of that bases loaded situation, he comes in, he walks Springer, and then he gets Simeon and Vladdy with the bases loaded. I thought it was going to be another Yarbrough situation here where he dinks and dunks his way through the Jays lineup and finds a way to go 3 or 4 scoreless. That was obviously not the case because they're just too hot. And if they can hit Yarbrough, I swear they can hit anyone in the league. But yeah, it's always super sweet when you beat the Rays, because we all know the history here. Doesn't matter where they play. If they play at that crap stadium down in Florida, they play at the Dome, anywhere they play, the Rays have the Jays number, and it's just so nice to get that first one. I really feel like they went into that game. I think it's a fair enough to call it a measuring stick game. Look, they were, what are they, 7 or 8 games ahead of the Jays in the division, and I really don't feel like there's a 7 or 8 game difference between these two teams in terms of skill level. So it's nice to see them go into this game where they've been hot. They beat up on the crappy Orioles, of course, which is everyone needs to do it. If you want to keep pace, you got to beat up on them. But then to go into a series against a really good team with, you know, good pitching, good lineup. Although their top prospect there, whose name's escaping me, Wander Franco, he's out. But this is a nice win, George, and to get the first one in a three-game set, like, you really got to start feeling like anything's possible here. They get it tonight, and then they go into that series. It's the Twins this weekend, right? You know, it's starting to really feel like things are getting special here in Toronto. I know I look at the standings every morning I wake up. I do that little look. God, it's a good feeling. But I've gone from in the last 2 weeks, I've gone from downtrodden to excited to cautiously optimistic to way too optimistic. Like, it's just been such a crazy 2 weeks here in the city of Toronto, and I can't wait to keep it going tonight.
Sam, I keep beating that drum. I don't know why this team, potentially, if you get through that wild card, they have a shot at winning the World Series. They really do. Like, when you're this hot, we've seen the Washington Nationals do it 2 years ago. And when you get pitching performances like Alec Manoah last night, good Lord, was he on fire. Only gave up that little flare single to Joey Wendell, and all of a sudden we could have been talking potentially a no-no for Alec Manoah. But he went in there. He just dominated the Rays. 10 strikeouts, no walks, fastest pitcher in Blue Jays history to get to 100 strikeouts in his career. Only took 17 starts. He has been unbelievable. And you know the one thing I was thinking about last night, because this is how my stupid brain works? I was thinking, and I go, I have to ask this question to Sam, because Sam's pretty much the only guy I want to ask this question to on the air. If you, and this is how dumb I am. And I apologize to all the Good Show listeners who are looking for intelligent sports talk. Who would you – you have to take one of these. You have to take a punch from either Vladdy or Alec Manoah. Who are you picking?
That's a great question.
Yeah, I know. That's why I was thinking about it.
I think I go Vladdy, maybe.
Really?
I don't know. That's a tough one. But he's got I think Vladdy's
huge
a little
mitts.
Shorter. He's huge a little shorter,
mitts,
right? So I think there's just a little less power, but the way he swings that bat, I don't know. They're both really, like, they're both beasts. I'm going Vladdy, a slight lean to Vladdy, but I would not want to take a punch from either. I like that question a lot, George. Really
you're
intelligent
welcome.
Sports talk.
Yeah, again, you're welcome. I'll ask J.D. Bunkus that when he jumps on at 11 o'clock, too.
He'll say Vlad for sure.
Yeah, and again, it'd be an honor to potentially maybe get punched in the face from a guy who could potentially it'd be, win the Triple Crown this year, right? Because you look at it, oh, guess what? He leads Major League Baseball now in home runs with 45. And thank God that ball didn't hit anybody. Thank God it just crept over the fence and a fan didn't attempt to catch that absolute laser beam that went over the left field wall. That could have hurt people. That thing exploded off Vlad's bat. And what was Dan Shulman was talking about, the average home run angle is like 25 degrees. That was like 15, and that thing just screamed over the wall. Good Lord, number one in batting average, number one in home runs, and all of a sudden, he's just four RBI behind Jose Abreu for the Major League Baseball lead. Like, the Triple Crown is in play here, too. And it's getting to the point now where this MVP race with Shohei Ohtani should be closer than what we think it is.
Yeah, and I'm happy that I came on the air yesterday and said that, are we sure Ohtani's the MVP? Because I saw a lot of that on the timeline last night. And I was like, oh boy, what a take by me. You know, I'm just getting out ahead of it here. Just intelligent sports talk radio, George. But
yeah, like, who would you rather get punched in the face by? Yeah.
I've been banging the drum all year that Vladdy's the MVP, and then he went into the coldest slump for, what was that, maybe 3 weeks, where he was just ice cold, couldn't pull a ball, and then he's just come out of it in September in the perfect time, and he looks like himself again. Listen, I think I always value team success, and maybe this is just like sort of the old school mentality for me, that I always value the team success. I always look at where they are in the standings. I always look how valuable they are to the lineup. And I think that argument can go both ways, right? Because you look at the Blue Jays lineup, and you talked about this yesterday, but there's a lot of really great hitters in this Blue Jays lineup, right? Like, they have 1 through 5, 1 through 6, they have probably the best lineup in the league at the moment. They're just so good. And you go over and you look at poor old Ohtani out in L.A. on the island by himself. Without him, what are they? I mean, they probably don't have 70 wins or whatever they have. They probably have 50 wins. They're horrible. So I think there's an argument to both sides of it, but I want my MVP to be in a playoff race in September here, carrying his team to a potential wild card. I think that, listen, is Shohei Ohtani the best pitcher in the league? No. Is he the best hitter in the league? No. But the fact that he combines and he's like in the top 10 of both is a really hard argument to make against it. So I still think it's going to be Ohtani, but I really think that Vladdy's making a huge case here. And if he continues, like if he hits 50 bombs, wins the triple crown, like we're really just going to hand it to Ohtani? I think there's a lot of writers that would go back to my sort of narrative about how the team success, the push. I really think there is a chance that he does win it in the end, but probably not.
Yeah, I think it does matter what he does in September here and what that looks like, right? Because it'll be recency bias, I hope, were some of the MVP voting, right? Because you just look at Vlad's numbers, they're just off the charts, right? He is just having an incredible year. 318, I don't know, people aren't too huge on batting average. On base is 407, and his OPS is 1018, which is absurd, like, for the entire season. Because Major League average is, what, 600? You got to be over 600 to be an average Major League Baseball hitter. And the one thing that we keep forgetting about is the dude's only 22 years old, Sam.
I know.
He's 22 years old, and he's doing this at the Major League Baseball level. We talked to Tim Leeper yesterday. Said guys aren't hitting their prime till 24, 25, 26. And you're looking at a historic season for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Here's the players at age 22 or younger who have hit 45 home runs. Here's a list. Eddie Matthews in 1953. Who doesn't remember his 47 bombs? Some guy named Joe DiMaggio hit 46 in 1937. And Johnny Bench hit 45 in 1970. There's your list.
End of list.
And Vladimir Guerrero Jr., 45.
Wow.
That's your list.
Yeah, that's special. Like, you think of all the, like, Griffey, A-Rod, all the you know, the 90s super-duper stars that came up young. Like, I guess baseball's kind of shifted in the fact that guys come up younger now. You look at Soto, you look at Acuna, you look across the league, like Tatis, but none of them have done that.
No.
Listen, get Vladdy, back up the what's bigger than the Brinks truck? I don't know. What's the biggest bank in the world? Back up the truck from there and give him the 15 or 13-year banger that they gave Tatis. Give him something. Like,
I don't care. Yeah, I don't care what it costs. That guy can't leave this organization ever. He can't.
No, I know. No.
He has to be a Blue Jay for his entire career. That's what he needs to be. And I don't know what it's going to look like in 10 years from now, what his body's going to be like, but I think he's just going to be an incredible hit. He's everything we thought he was going to be, and now more. Sammy, like, when we heard about him, it was, again, the comparisons, Pujols, Cabrera. This guy could be one of the greatest right-handed hitters in the history of baseball. He's starting to live up to those expectations. He's actually exceeding those expectations. This is how good this guy is. And you're right. Sign this guy to that 14-year deal. I don't even care how much it is, right? You work around it. You sign him here, he can't leave this organization. And I know everybody hates on Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins. Well, still some of the fan base still, for some reason, doesn't like the front office, which I don't care. Just show me a winning team on the field, and I don't care who's the president, the GM, whatever. But what a gift Alex Anthopoulos left for this organization when they signed him as a 16-year-old. Like, that move, that... And it kind of, we kind of heard about it when it happens. Like, wow, they signed Vladdy Jr.'s kid. He's 16 years old. Wow, what is that going to look like? I guess they see something in this kid. Good Lord, what a special, special gift Alex Anthopoulos left the Blue Jays organization.
For sure. And I remember watching those videos. Remember that, like, video of him playing on that, like, dirt, the smallest crap dirt diamond, and the sound off of his bat? And, you know, you see those videos of prospects, and, you know, that's really not that long ago. What was that? When he was 16, so that was, you know, 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
It's really not that long ago, right? That video came out. And for him to be doing this already is unbelievable. And to have him, I really, really wish, like, I, you know, God love Ohtani for what he's doing, but God, I wish that wasn't happening, so that this could just be a runaway sort of coronation for Vladdy winning an MVP, because it's just been such an incredible year. Listen, and there was the arguments when he went into that cold slump about how they were playing down in that joke ballpark down in Dunedin and then Buffalo, and that a lot of the power numbers were aided by this. Now he's really showing off that he's just a great hitter, and that it doesn't matter where they play. Like, he is really... I'm surprised that he's turned it around like this, because I thought he was in a cold, cold slump, long season, didn't think he was going to have it in him to be able to rally. Did you? Like, it's been a really incredible turnaround here in September after a really dreary August.
Yeah, he and again, what do we talk about? Fatigue, right? Fatigue's the factor with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Watch out. He might be the guy. You know, it's starting to catch up with him playing a full Major League Baseball season. Not the case. And I just looked it up. His away numbers, this is what he's slashing. 301, 388, 520 slug, a 908 OPS on the road with 17 yeah. bombs, 42 ribbies. It's pretty good. It's pretty good numbers on the road for Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who continues just to be phenomenal. And let's not forget Teoscar Hernandez, 5 hits last night.
Yeah, like, with no like RBIs. How's that happen?
Yeah, he's like the again it happened. He's the one guy on this team. It's like, oh yeah, Teo, we got to sign him too, because all the attention's on Robbie Ray and Marcus Semien and what those contracts are going to look like, and if one of them or both or potentially none of them are going to be here next season. But Teo needs a deal too, and there's a move, as I praised Alex Anthopoulos. There's a move that this current front office made for Francisco Liriano. Thanks for that trade, Houston Astros.
What a
deal
that
was. Teoscar Hernandez.
Yeah. That's an amazing one, really. I'm just trying to rack my brain of their best trades, but there's no argument that that's not their best one, right?
Like, I think it has to be, right?
Yeah.
Like, what? Yeah. Like, well, like, again, it's one of those under-the-radar moves that all of a sudden has blossomed here for this year's Toronto Blue Jays. I forgot to talk about this yesterday, and I kind of kicked myself because I wanted to get your opinion on it.
Yeah, let me have it.
I like the fact that the Blue Jays, again, they're having... People always blow fun out of proportion. Oh, look how much fun this team's having and whatever. And because I just think back to the 2013 Blue Jays with Jose Reyes, how much quote-unquote fun they were having. They would lose all these games and it would drive people nuts that they were having so much fun and losing all these games. I love the fact that Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is actually contributing big time, and he's been one of their most important players here since pretty much the All-Star break, because he's the first guy out of the dugout, like celebrating. And it's like... Oh, yeah. Yeah, you don't want other that whole Munenori Kawasaki guy celebrating, because like, he's kind of like a joke. He's a caricature. Like, you know, he doesn't really contribute to the team. I'm so glad that he's playing so well, because he's the first guy out there with his crazy hair doing the guns and getting all excited. And he's been phenomenal since the All-Star break.
Dude, he's been unbelievable. And he was amazing again last night. Like, I've been blown away by his contributions. And I... It's funny, I go back and forth with him. Last year in the offseason, I wish they traded him. Then he gets hot. I'm like, oh, they can never get rid of him. And then, you know, he gets hot. You're like, oh, maybe they could trade him for Jose Ramirez now. It's a bad thing to say, but I really have been impressed with his contributions to the team in the second half. He's carried them. I mean, that grand slam that he hit against Oakland after Alejandro Kirk worked the walk of the year to make it a four-run game and then have him hit the grand slam in the fourth. That you could argue that's the turning point of the season when he hit that grand
100%.
Slam. I understand
Sam,
that they came back in the... Sorry, go ahead.
Sam, I'm with you. Sam, I'm with you. That sparked this run. Again, I don't know if and Leap said it yesterday, momentum's as good as the next day's starting pitcher. I get all of that. But, Sam, this is a different team since that comeback win against the A's. They're just a different team.
Yep, they've been amazing, man. And I, like, listen, I was at the park for that game. They did blow the lead in the top of the ninth. Semien had to hit the bomb. But I can tell you the way that park felt after the bomb and before that bomb, it was like two different crowds. And I just feel like the whole fan base has felt like this is going to start happening. Since then, they swept away the A's, and away they go. So it's been an incredible run, and we have Laura Armstrong after the break to talk more about it. But, man, can I just have a quick question for you before we go?
Sure.
What inning do you start thinking about perfect game?
After the sixth.
Okay, we're in lockstep.
Yeah.
The thoughts were crossing my mind last night because he had it working, Manoah, and I really thought there was potential. And if he hadn't given up that hit, he was at, what, 95 pitches? He could have gone back out there and done it for the ninth if he hadn't given up a hit. It was the right move to lift him, obviously. But I really thought that he had the no-hit stuff going. I really thought that there was a chance when he was whatever inning that was at the top of the fifth that he gave up the knock. It was really starting to look. I was starting to get a little excited, I have to say. So maybe I jumped the gun a little bit.
Sammy, you and I are on the same wavelength right now, because I was thinking about that last night, too. It's like, how does this organization only have one no-hitter? How's that even possible?
I know.
It's so common now in baseball, right? Not that it's that common, but it happens a lot. And Dave Steeb's the only guy to ever do it.
There's been nine this year.
Yeah, I know. It was in the 80s. Like, that's how long it's been since the Blue Jays. Eventually, I'm sure it's going to happen.
Brandon Morrow was so close.
Oh, yeah. Roy Halladay was so close, too. Like, we've seen so many instances where it was so close. My cousin alleges that he was at that game in Cleveland when Dave Steve threw the no-hitter, when Junior Felix caught the ball in right field.
Him and other 500,000 Jays fans.
He alleges that of those group of dudes who were jumping up and down in the corner, he was one of them.
Wow. Okay. Let's see the ticket stub, bud.
Yeah, I know. I'm skeptical. I'm a little skeptical. It might have happened. He swears to me that it's actually true because I know his buddy's a big Cleveland sports fan.
Okay.
So, maybe he was there for that, which would be kind of cool to see the only no-hitter in Blue Jays history. For now. All right. We'll talk later. Laura Armstrong, I'm going to talk to you about Cristiano Ronaldo, how he's always watching you. Well, if you were his teammate. We'll do that later. But straight ahead, Laura Armstrong, Blue Jays beat writer for the Toronto Star, will join us. Talk about those just red-hot, ridiculous Blue Jays. We'll do that next. Sportsnet today. That's Sam. I'm George. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sportsnet today. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. George Russick here all week, 9 to noon. Later on this hour, Cristiano Ronaldo is always watching. He's always watching you. Mark Schofield, NFL writer for USA Today, will join us at 10 a.m. What a Monday nighter last night, too. Woo! Raiders and Ravens from Las Vegas, will break that down. We'll talk about overreactions of week one, which always happen. It was out to Luke Fox, NHL Maple Leafs writer for Sportsnet.ca at 10:20. But right now, she's a Blue Jays beat writer for the Toronto Star. We're joined by Laura Armstrong. Laura, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Laura, I'm great. How are you balancing watching the Blue Jays, what they're doing, and Arsenal's start to the EPL season?
That's not where I thought we were going to start, George, and now I'm upset.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. Arsenal, I've never cheered so hard for such a terrible goal like the one that Arsenal scored against Norwich on the weekend. Like, it was the worst goal. It was, like, essentially they just got lucky, and I cheered like an absolute lunatic. So I would say that I'm spiraling as an Arsenal fan. And, you know, as a Jays beat writer, it's been a wild month. I mean, you look at the playoff odds at the end of August, and now you look at the playoff odds, and you're just like, I guess the season's going to be a little longer than we might have thought it was going to be.
And that means awesome times for the Blue Jays. Watching that game last night, I just thought of it. It just feels surreal right now, doesn't it? Like watching the Toronto Blue Jays. It feels like everything we said that they have to do. Oh, they got to go on some incredible run if they're going to catch the vaunted Red Sox and Yankees. Wow, look at the Yankees winning 13 in a row. Blue Jays are done. So many Texans in the radio station. Why are you guys talking about the Blue Jays? They're done. It just feels surreal these last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought that was like just a huge overreaction, frankly. Like, I mean, this team was always, in my opinion, always going to mount like some kind of like attempt. I didn't think it was necessarily going to be like of these proportions, because at this point, literally everything is going right for this Blue Jays team, right? I mean, you know, you're having a guy like Breivik Valera who's like hitting out of his mind, you know, it's one of those times where it's like everything is going well. I mean, it all starts with pitching. I know we're all excited by the bats, particularly after what happened over the weekend at Baltimore. It was a fun weekend to watch. And last night too, I mean, you know, it means something more to you know, put a touchdown past the Tampa Bay Rays versus the Baltimore Orioles. But I do think that it all sort of comes down to the fact that the rotation has really clicked over the last month, or a little bit more than a month. And that's something that, you know, you always needed to see from the Blue Jays. I mean, pitching had to get better. The bats had to heat up. The defense had to get better. The bullpen had to stop like leaking runs at the end of the game, and it's all clicked. And you know, I mean, it's that's incredibly fun to watch. And honestly, for Blue Jays fans, like, it's really exciting to see. I'm sure it was exciting to be in the building last night. And you know, I think that like this city deserves it after this team deserves it after what they've been through over the past couple of years.
Yeah, that's something I think we'll look back at the 2021 Toronto Blue Jays, and I think that was a crutch that was kind of, or a built-in excuse, and I think it's been very difficult for the Blue Jays to have three homes this year, and I think that's what makes this even more impressive, right? Because we don't know, because we treat professional athletes as commodities. We don't treat them as human beings, and we're all guilty of doing that. And not having a home for essentially a year and a half is tough. It's very tough. And now you see what that means when they're at Rogers Center playing in their own home ballpark. And it's just, we're not, I don't think we've given this team enough credit to A, playing in such a tough division, and B, being in their third home this season. I think that's what makes this run even more remarkable when everything comes together at the absolute most important time of the season.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that you could, say that for any of Toronto's professional teams over the last couple of years, right? Like, I mean, I don't think that we've given enough credit to Toronto FC or to the Raptors or to the Jays for what they have gone through. And I think that you're absolutely right about the commodity thing. Like, especially baseball players, they love routine. Like, they thrive on routine and they're doing well. You hear it so much. You know, Vladdy is doing well because Vladdy is consistently stuck with his routine. Well, like, his routine might mean, a specific bed, a specific mattress, you know? Like, who knows? Or a specific, like, breakfast place, or a specific length of the walk to the ballpark to get yourself in the right headspace. And that might all be based on Rogers Center, right? So I do think that plays into it. And I think that at the end of the day, it's important for us to remember that these players are human beings as well. And when you're, you know, for example, away from your family, it can bring down your work, that kind of thing. So I also do think, though, that it's powerful for them now. Like, I mean, maybe the resiliency that this team has built up, and the fact that they're, you know, not down after that poor stretch in August, it comes from the fact that they have dealt with harder things. And they know how to put it together when it matters. So it's really fun to watch, and it'll be really interesting to see how it goes the rest of the way here.
Laura, am I getting way ahead of myself? Because obviously right now they're in that number one wild card spot, and you got to win that one wild card game, which is always such a nail biter. And we saw it in 2016 when they beat the Orioles. Thanks for that one too. Baltimore sitting their best Zach Britton on, but whatever. That's ancient history now. The hottest teams generally have really deep runs in baseball. We saw the Washington Nationals do that, ride that all the way to the World Series. If they get past that wild card game, assuming they get there, and I don't think there's any reason to believe why they can't be a playoff team now, the percentages show it, why can't this team potentially win a world championship or even get damn close?
Oh, boy. You're taking us back to the end of October, aren't you?
Why not?
I don't know. Listen, it's an interesting question.
They're scorching hot.
They are scorching hot, and you're right. Momentum wins championships, and I'm not entirely disagreeing with you. I think that the one thing is that, like, when you look at the teams that they're competing against right now, and I don't mean the teams that they're necessarily competing against on the field, but the teams that they're competing against for this wild card spot, like, I think they're better than the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Mariners, the Oakland A's. Like, I think that they're better than that. The question will be, can they be consistently better than teams that are, like, on paper and have been for the course of this season better than them? And it might be a matter of, it might absolutely be a matter of, the Blue Jays are the team that has the momentum, and they're scary. They are absolutely scary. I mean, you don't pull off an 8-0 result against the Tampa Bay Rays and think, oh, these guys don't have a shot, right? But it's just going to be a matter of, like, how consistent can they be? And I mean, what they've shown, one of the things that I think that is really important over this last stretch between the Yankees and Baltimore is the fact that they really haven't dropped games for a lot of time during this series. Like, this season, they were winning two games. You know, when they were hot earlier in the year, they were winning two of three games, right? And in the playoffs, you can't do that. You need to try and win them all, or you need to be close to winning them all. So it's definitely a possibility. Have I marked my calendar for, like, October 28th or when the World Series starts? Not yet, but am I completely, have I booked my vacation? No.
Good. I don't think you should, because there's a chance.
Yeah.
And we know the baseball playoffs is a crapshoot. It's the team that's the hottest potentially could ride that momentum. Although I'm just saying, again, I just get past that wild card game and bring on whoever, because this starting rotation, and I think that's even the, Jamie and Joe talked about it last night. The starters is kind of what's been maybe even more impressive. It's pretty much lockdown, right? And out of all these, the one loss they have in Baltimore would be the one you think they would never lose, with Robbie Ray on the mound against the stinking Baltimore Orioles, and that's the one game they lost. When that guy's right there in the Cy Young conversation, I know Hyun-Jin Ryu has struggled a little bit, but even last night, Manoah's been fantastic. Barrios is really finding his stride now here, too. We'll see him pitch tonight down at Rogers Center. But the rotation, like Alek Manoah's got to be one of the, and again, these are first world problems here, Laura. Like, is Manoah a top three guy in a DS series, or he's the fourth? I don't even know what the pitching rotation looks like, but the Blue Jays are deep in starting pitching, and if they go deeper, you still have some decent bullpen arms, especially when they're getting healthy. Laura, this team's really coming together at the right time, and I don't think it's crazy that they could potentially have a deep run. I don't think it is.
Well, you know what? You said it probably not first, but I'm sure other people have said it, but you definitely said it. So you're on the record.
Yeah, that's fine. No, it's fine. Yeah.
No,
I'm on the record.
So you should be.
I think this team
can
win the World Series. Yes, I will go on the record and say I think they can. There's obviously a ton of stuff that can happen in a short series, but I think momentum out of the big four, it means something in baseball. And we've seen 100%. It countless times. Countless times where the best team doesn't win. Are the Blue Jays the best team in baseball? No. Are they the hottest team in baseball? You're damn right. They're the hottest team in baseball right now. Laura
also,
Armstrong.
Go back to,
Go ahead.
No, but to go back to it, I would use Alek Manoah 100%. Alek Manoah is a big game guy. If you have three games, you put Alek Manoah out there. I want to see that. I want to see playoff Alek Manoah. That's a fun guy to watch.
Yeah, he kind of, like, and again, I don't know what he's going to look like in the playoffs if they get there and he gets to pitch. He kind of has that Marcus Stroman vibe about him, right? That, like, I want to see that guy pitch in the postseason.
100%.
I love it. Laura Armstrong, Blue Jays beat writer for the Toronto Star, joining us here at Sportsnet today. George Russick, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Are you as guilty as I am, well, when you watch Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and forget the dude's only 22 years old?
No, I will say that that's the one thing that I do not forget about him, and that's just the one thing that makes this, like, just so incredible and so fun to watch. I am the one who's, like, watched him hit a home run last night and was like, he's getting 50. Could he get 55? I don't know. We'll see. Like, I was enthralled. But, I mean, he's just the kind of guy that, like, I definitely think earlier last year and when he was coming up, you do forget that he's young because he feels like he's been around forever. But I also think that part of the thing that people love about Vlad is that he loves baseball. Like, he loves the game, and it's fun to cheer for a guy who loves the game, and you can tell he loves the team, and you can, you know, you watch him cheering for Lourdes Gurriel last night, and you're thinking to yourself, like, this is a kid who can play baseball really, really well. And I think that that's just something, I think that that is kind of like, that sort of fearlessness is something that we've seen throughout Canadian sports over the past, you know, couple of months. I think you watch Julia Grosso be the 20 and she takes the final penalty for the women's national team, the soccer team, to win gold. You watch Leila Fernandez, you watch Felix Auger-Aliassime, and then you watch Vlad, and you think to yourself, like, why are these people having success? And I think that to some extent, it's because they have this fearlessness about them, because they don't have the baggage of being, like, a long time athlete who has lost and who has seen, you know, professional athlete who has lost and who has seen, you know, real hardship. So I think that, you know, Vlad, on top of being extremely good at baseball, is a guy who just loves to play the game. And I think that's why, too, it's important for the Blue Jays to push as much as they can, because if you get these guys, you know, winning or maybe just, like, exceeding expectations early in their career, then maybe some of that baggage doesn't collect so early, and they're the kind of guys who just, like, never lose the love for the game. It never just becomes a job for them.
He's only a few RBI behind Jose Abreu to be in the Triple Crown position. Mm-hmm. And, Laura, as you mentioned, he's been around forever. We heard all of it. I talked to Sam McKee before he jumped on about how when they signed him as a 16-year-old, wow, Alex Anthopoulos, who's this kid? Wow, Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? Wow, that's impressive that the Blue Jays just signed a 16-year-old. But we heard all the comparisons, right? Pujols and Cabrera. Yeah. This guy could be one of the – I think he's right now – Is it possible that's even exceeding expectations, Laura, already this part of his career?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the Blue Jays were right to sort of be the people who reminded, you know, fans and media that, you know, Vlad was young. And when he had these moments where he maybe wasn't being the guy that he is being right now, it was kind of like, okay, he's 22. Like he's just at the beginning of his career. Like we're so far away from him being in his prime. Even we're years, probably a handful of years away from him being in his prime. So if this is what like his, like the sort of exterior of his prime looks like, what is his prime going to be? You know, I think that this is maybe a guy that you would have thought would reach 50, 55 home runs, for example, when, you know, 4 or 5 years into his career, and that would have been a pinnacle and it would have been fantastic. And now he's doing it sort of right out of the gate. And I also think when you think about Vlad, you know, you sort of thought potentially when he was coming up, it was very much a matter of he's going to be a slugger, right? And that's great. And he is a slugger. But I think that the one thing that we don't talk about enough about him is the fact that his all-around game is so much better, I think, than we thought it was going to be. Even you think about that Alex Anthopoulos and going to get Vlad when he was young and signing him as a 16-year-old, and it was like he was just coming from the outfield. They were turning him into a third baseman, and now they've turned him into a first baseman, and there's been a lot of chaos for him as a young player trying to learn different positions while also trying to be exceptional at the plate, and he's handled that all very well. So I think that when some of it settles, the dust on that settles a little bit, you're going to look at him and you're going to say, this isn't the player necessarily that Alex Anthopoulos thought he was going to, he thought he was even signing, right? He's a better player because there's different elements of his game that are better. I mean, his conditioning is a huge part of the reason why he's been so good this year. It's a huge part of the reason why he still has the energy to be hitting home runs in September. So I definitely think that, you know, he's exceeding expectations both at the plate, but also as like an his all around game, which I don't necessarily know that at the outset of his career, you thought he's going to be the kind of all around player that could lead a franchise, you know?
With all these games down the stretch here and potentially, getting past the Red Sox and Yankees, mm-hmm. is there a way he could hit his way to the MVP these last few weeks of the season because of how important the games are and recency bias is a thing when it comes to some of these awards?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely look at like Shohei Ohtani, who it feels kind of like the award has already been given to Shohei Ohtani, and I think that what Shohei Ohtani has been doing is exceptional, but I did see someone make the argument on social media, so you know that this is a fantastic argument, be all and end all. But I mean, are we going to give Shohei Ohtani the MVP for the rest of his career because he pitches and he hits and he does both quite well? Like, I don't know. So that it's an interesting question. It's going to be a question for people who are voting to grapple with for years to come, frankly, hopefully, because we want to continue to see Shohei Ohtani do what he does. And maybe the recency bias will come into play with him in the sense that this is sort of the first year he's done it like very well at a high level. And so maybe that's, you know, just something that people can't get past, but he hasn't been hitting as well in the second half of the season. His pitching numbers have been very good in the second half of the season. So we'll see how that balances out. But certainly if Vlad, you know, manages to, what do they have? 18 games left and he gets five more home runs and passes 50 or more than five home runs, then I think, you know, it's definitely possible that he at least garners more votes and makes it a competition, because it does sort of feel like it's been written in like for a long time now that Ohtani is going to be the MVP. And at the very least, you'd like to see Vlad push him for that award and get some recognition, because if he's going to win a triple crown, then it's wild to think that he's not just like he's not just the automatic choice.
Can I ask you a serious question before we go? And I hate ending on a serious
sure.
note, but I think it's important.
Okay.
Last night's attendance down at Rogers Center was the lowest since last night's game was the first game where only fully vaccinated fans can attend. Do you think there's a correlation there?
I think that there absolutely could be a correlation there, and I give the Blue Jays full credit for implementing this protocol. I think that baseball and watching baseball is a luxury. And I think that if you're going to be a person who is helping your community, then to stay healthy, then you should absolutely be able to go watch baseball games. And I think that everybody, if that's what's going to get you into the ball, get you to get a vaccine, is your ability to go to the ballpark, that's fantastic. But I think that we forget, and it's easy as sports fans to forget that, you know, you get caught up in a win over the Rays like last night, and you forget that during the day yesterday there were people outside of hospitals protesting against a vaccine that is going to save people's lives. So I think that we can't get caught up in baseball. We can use it as a absolute, escape from reality for a couple hours every day. But we have to remember that we're still in a global pandemic. We still need to be doing what's best for our community as a whole. And I think the Blue Jays are absolutely doing that. And I'm really happy for all the people who were in the stands last night and proud of them for getting their vaccine.
All right, well said. Laura Armstrong, Blue Jays beat writer for the Toronto Star. Laura, thanks for this, and best of luck to your Gunners for the rest of the EPL season.
Thank you. We will need it.
Yeah, all right. There she goes. Armstrong, thank you for this. Straight ahead, we'll stick to a little bit of soccer talk. Cristiano Ronaldo was always watching his teammates. We'll do that next when producer Sam McKee jumps on. And Mark Schofield, NFL writer for USA Today's Touchdown Wire, will join us at 10 o'clock. Don't forget, Blue Jays and Rays, game two of the three-game set tonight right here, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Watch it on Sportsnet. Jose Berríos on the mound for Toronto. Ronaldo's watching. We'll do that next. Sportsnet Today, George Russick, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Sportsnet Today, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. George Russick, alongside Sam McKee. At the top of the next hour, Mark Schofield, NFL writer for USA Today's Touchdown Wire. Big, exciting win by the Las Vegas Raiders over the Baltimore Ravens last night in the Monday Nighter. That game had a lot of twists and turns. And Mark Davis, man, that haircut is just something to behold when they saw multiple shots of the Raiders owner in his owner's box. We'll talk to Luke Fox, NHL Leafs writer for Sportsnet.ca. Morgan Rielly heading into the season unsigned. That's great. Are they just going to let him walk via free agency? Just let that type of asset walk out the door for nothing. We'll talk to Luke Fox about that. And what is his expectations of the Maple Leafs heading into the season? But Sam, did you see what Ronaldo did for Man United over the weekend where they thrashed Newcastle?
I did not.
He scored twice.
I saw that. Did you see what? Yeah, I saw that. That was amazing.
Yeah,
I thought you were going to say something else. No, he looked good.
Yeah, he did look good because he's Ronaldo, and he almost looks spectacular because he's a super handsome gentleman.
Yes, he really is.
Yeah, he's sculpted. Just because a lot of things are going well enough for Ronaldo, like he's arguably the greatest soccer player of all time, and he's also incredibly good looking.
Yeah, does he have to be a 10? Like, could he maybe be a 7?
Yeah, right. Like Messi.
Exactly.
Like Messi looks like he's a great soccer player, right?
Exactly.
Like, nailed it. If you're talking about GOAT debate, like, yeah, like just because you weren't dealt an incredibly good hand about your soccer ability, you also have to be incredibly good looking. Good for you, Ronaldo. You're absolutely winning at life. We all saw the press conference, the news conference at Euro 2020, where he removed the bottle of Coke. And it cost Coke like $4 billion because he's like, drink water, don't drink Coke. You remember that, right?
Of course, yes.
Okay. So now, according to this story in Talk Sport, Ronaldo's already changing the eating habits of guys on Man United. According to goalkeeper Lee Grant, on Friday night they have team dinner and they have some desserts out there because in case you want to have a cheat day, so they have like brownies and they have like apple crumble and they have some custard, whatever you want they have there for the team dinner kind of as a cheat day. Nobody went up there and grabbed dessert apparently on Friday night because Ronaldo's plate was so incredibly healthy. Everyone was terrified to go up there and grab dessert in front of Cristiano Ronaldo because I can't go out there. So here's his quote. So we are having a little look at what he got. Obviously is the cleanest, most healthy plate you can imagine. And he also says, I'll tell you, not one player touched the apple crumble and custard. Not one player went up for the brownie because everybody sat down and one of the lads to me was like, what's Cristiano gotten on his plate? Nobody even went close to the desserts because Ronaldo was sitting there. You want to hear the most... This is crazy. I didn't even know this about Ronaldo. But it even makes me more jealous of how spectacular this guy is. According to ESPN FC, Sam, Ronaldo eats up to 6 meals. And this is the best thing. This is a typical day for Ronaldo. Eats 6 meals and takes 5 naps a day.
Mm. Wow, that's a good life. That sounds great. I could get into that.
5 naps a day.
So, when you take a nap... Because I like a nap here and there.
Love naps.
I think the science is the short naps are the most refreshing. Like if you fall asleep on the couch for maybe like 30 minutes or, 20 minutes, you often wake up feeling quite refreshed from that. But like if you go into you've had too many orange crushes the night before and you fall asleep on the couch for like 2.5 hours, you wake up having no idea where you are and just thinking that you crossed over. So I feel like maybe he's having, maybe quick little naps, maybe 5 20-minute naps a day. Do you think that's what he's doing? There's no way he's having – there's not enough time in the day. He's Cristiano. He's got to have quick naps.
And I guarantee it's like in a hyperbaric chamber too. Has to be. He lies down in some sort of pod that makes him even younger and more spectacularly good looking. That's how he keeps. And it's probably like the blood of puppies that he drinks or something. I don't know, to keep him super young. Here's his diet too. Before we get to break, Ronaldo's diet typically consists of chicken, eggs, olives, and fish, and it must be cooked in coconut oil. And apparently, sometimes he does start his day with some ham and cheese, but that's not a normal day. But sometimes he'll treat himself and start the day with some ham and cheese. But generally, that guy eats super healthy. But the most impressive thing is how he sneaks in 5 naps a day. And you're right, it's probably like 20 minutes at a time.
Okay, so let me ask you this. I don't eat like total crap. Like I actually, I'll have days where I eat well, and on the weekends sometimes I'll eat out. But like, I guess it's worth it to be like, if you get that sculpted and you have like the sickest body, you're really that desperate to keep it that good, I guess. Like not being, just never treating yourself. Is that the life you want to live? Like where you're just that's like, I'm not talking, obviously if I would eat like that to be Cristiano Ronaldo, but like just to be like a random buff guy, like that's worth it?
Yeah, I guess like it has to be, right? What I do know is this, Sam, this is what I do know. Feeling skinny is a lot better than as good as anything tastes.
Mm, I don't know.
Right?
You had McDonald's recently? It's pretty good.
Well, look at Tom Brady. You know all his meals just consist of sadness, like everything
he
eats.
But he doesn't look forward to eating.
He's literally defying like anything we've ever seen in professional sports. At the top of his sport at like 44. And Tom Brady drinks so much water that he can't get sunburned.
He's such a weirdo.
He said that. Honestly. He said that. And at this point, I don't even Tom Brady can beat the sun, Sam, but he drinks so much water. I think that's more impressive that Tom Brady drinks like 37 glasses of water a day. I don't even know how he has time for anything. How is he not in the bathroom every 5 minutes?
He probably is. And listen, I was watching that game on Thursday night. There was a lot going on that night, but I had so many screens going. I was putting on a sports watching display.
Yeah.
But I had this moment of like, I know we got to go to break here, but it wasn't even disbelief because I'm not going to doubt Tom Brady anymore. It's a fool's errand. But it's like, what year is it? How am I still watching this? He's just marching down the field, like same, looks exactly the same as he did in 2005. It's insane.
And you knew he was going to do it.
I would have bet my life on it.
Yeah, because he's Tom Brady, and he's incredible. Incredible. Later on in the show, I'm going to tell you how soft the Jacksonville Jaguars Twitter account is. It is soft as butter in the hot sun. We'll do that later on in the next hour. We'll talk to Mark Schofield straight ahead. Luke Fox on your Toronto Maple Leafs, Sam. Lots to unpack when it comes to the Leafs right now. And we'll talk to J.D. Bunkus at 11 o'clock. It is Sportsnet today. That's Sam. I'm George. Take 5 naps today. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It was a strange place in a tender age. It was just a babe in school. Saw the nose rise at me.
Sportsnet today. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. My name is George Rusick. In all week for Good Show and J.D. Bunkus. Ben. Later on this hour, Luke Fox, NHL Maple Leafs writer for Sportsnet.ca, will join us. Later on this hour, too, the Jags Twitter account, just so soft. Soft as butter in the hot sun. At the top of the next hour, on his vacation, because he has to talk about sports, J.D. Bunkus, the host of Good Show, will join us as well. But right now, looking around, week one's finally in the books. Mark Schofield's an NFL writer for USA Today's Touchdown Wire, and he joins us here on Sportsnet today. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing well, George. Thanks for having me. How are you today?
I'm super. Thanks for jumping on. How much of a liar is week one of the NFL season, Mark?
I mean, I think it's very much a liar. It's somebody you probably don't want to play poker with because, you know, week one can skew results because we've seen some teams have great week one performances. I mean, I remember years ago, you know, we saw Washington come out in Steve Spurrier's first game and look fantastic, but they went on and had a bad year. Jacksonville beat Indianapolis in week one of last season. You know, teams have the ability to sort of game plan for an opponent over an entire training camp and preseason period. And so they're ready for this game. And so sometimes the teams that just have maybe better coaching but not good enough talent, they can come win week one, but then sort of fade over the rest of the season. So I know we all love to overreact, right? You know, Monday after the first week of NFL games, overreaction Monday. You know, now we're thinking, you know, Jalen Hurts is an MVP. You know, we're thinking that the Baltimore Ravens are going to go 0-17. I mean, that's what we do on the first Monday because we finally have football to talk about. But I think we need to sort of take a step back, practice some patience, and realize that we've got 16 more games to go. We've got a long way to go before this season is all said and done. And so let's sort of take a sort of sober and reserved look at what we saw and try to apply some of those lessons going forward.
Last night's game was it was fun, Mark. That was a fun game to watch, the Monday Nighter where the Raiders win in overtime. And I think the storyline maybe it gets a little lost is Max Crosby's play, because that's the one thing the Raiders, after that win against the Chiefs, all of a sudden last season were in playoff contention, and then their defense just absolutely imploded. I know it's only one game, but what you saw from the Raiders' defense, and they went out there and got a lot of veteran help, guys like Yannick Ngakoue too. Do you think the Raiders' defense can be average to good this season, which potentially could get them in the thick of a wild card spot because that offense is still pretty good?
I think so, and I think that pair up front with Crosby and everything we saw from him last night, his quickness, his ability to put together pass rushing moves. You know, he's going up against Andre Villanueva, who looked to have a rough night. But a lot of that was because Crosby was putting him in some bad situations with his violence off the snap, his quick hands, his explosiveness. And I think Ngakoue on the other side, sometimes they move him inside to the interior. That gives you the ability to get after a quarterback, move him off the spot, force him to make some tough reads, tough throws under pressure. And they were going up against a difficult to pin down back there who's so elusive in the pocket, but they moved him off the spot. They forced him into some throwaways. They sacked him a couple of times. You know, Lamar still made some plays with his legs, but it wasn't enough. I think you're right, George. That defense, it's going to be better. It might get to sort of league average or maybe slightly above average, but with that offense and in today's NFL, a league average defense is maybe all that you need given the way the game is skewed, right, given the points you can put on the board. Now, the problem is, of course, look, you're going to get the Chiefs twice. Denver, very good team. They had a nice win out in New York. You know, if Teddy Bridgewater can be that point guard distributor, you know, Denver could be very good. Chargers look very good again. Justin Herbert looked good in against Washington, which is also a very good defense. And so, you know, it still might not be enough to win the division. But that wild card spot, one of those wild card spots, certainly looks in contention for the Raiders here after we finish up week one.
Mark, do you know why? Can you explain to me why John Gruden's such a polarizing figure? Like, all these takes on social media and some of the talking heads down south, oh, the game's passing John Gruden by. I thought some of the play calling last night was terrific, and that guy knows offense. Maybe not defense, but that guy knows offense, and I think he's still relevant in today's NFL. And I think last night's game, albeit it's only one game, but the offense has always been good with the Raiders. I don't think the game's passed him by. Do you?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, it's sort of, you know, that Batman line, you either, you know, die a hero or live long enough to become the villain. You know, I think we see that with people that, like Gruden, they become sort of an analyst. They're on Monday Night Football, and their love and passion for the game. It's, we love it at first, but then people start sort of chipping away at it. We all, we kind of see it now with Tony Romo too. When Romo first came into the booth on CBS, people loved it. He's calling out plays at the snap. You know, he's predicting stuff. He's telling us what quarterbacks are looking for. And then it kind of wears on people and they sort of turn on them. I think maybe some of that had something to do with what, how people, like you said, George, view Gruden right now. He is a bit polarizing. But you see some of the route concepts they dialed up. You know, and I have to say, like, some of those aggressive decisions made at the end of that game, you know, obviously the near touchdown at the end, the touchdown to win it, those were some aggressive, you know, creative concepts that they called. They knew exactly what they were going to get. They knew Baltimore was trying to bring pressure, go with some of those, you know, man coverage, blitz packages to try to force Derek Carr into a mistake. So they dialed up routes that they knew would give them an opportunity to make plays. They did a lot out of different formations to create rub concepts. The game-winning touchdown, that bunch look to the left with Zay Jones, you know, they pick off a defender and he's wide open. But Gruden still knows offense, just like you said. I don't think the game's passed him by at all. And in this day and age, when you need to score points to win, I think he can do enough from an offensive play design standpoint to put the Raiders in good position to win games.
Mark, I want to hear your opinion on this take I've had with my friends, and I've shared it on the radio station here as well. To me, if Lamar Jackson could just throw the ball 25% better than he already does, everything that encompasses a quarterback's ability, his reads, his throws, his accuracy, just 25% better, he's the most unstoppable player in the NFL. What say you?
I mean, I think that's pretty accurate. I saw somebody tweet last night that, and I forget who, their name escapes me, I wish I could remember it, but they said, if Lamar could just throw as well as Jimmy Garoppolo, he'd be the best quarterback of all time. And I think there's something to that, because as much as I am a fan of Lamar Jackson, you know, we spent a lot of time this summer saying, oh, well, has the league figured him out? I don't think you can really figure out somebody with that athletic ability. You don't know where he's going to be in the pocket. You have to account for him on every play. The passing still leaves a bit to be desired. Now, he did have a couple of great throws near the end of that game. He had the you know, the deep shot to Sammy Watkins that set up a touchdown for them. And so, you know, he's good, but it still could be better. And if he was, like you said, that 25% better, you know, a bit more consistent with his ball placement, because he's still missing some throws and some opportunities. And, of course, there's that sort of double-edged sword, right, where he's so athletic. He's so elusive. One of his early scrambles, you know, he looked at his first read, didn't like the look, and just said, look, I can tuck the ball and get 16, 17 yards. And on many occasions, that might work for him, but you'd still like to see him say, okay, well, my first read isn't there. I'm going to go to my second read, or I'm going to check the ball down, or I'm going to do something else, you know, so he's not putting so much on himself. I think he's a tremendous talent. I don't think the league has figured him out, but I do think if he was just a little bit better as a passer, like you said, he'd be one of the game's best quarterbacks.
Mark Schofield, NFL writer for USA Today's Touchdown Wire, joining us here on Sportsnet today. George Russick, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Am I reading too much into Aaron Rodgers' body language in week one against the Saints, or is that going to be a thing this entire season?
I think it's going to be a thing. I mean, we spent so much time this summer wondering about Aaron Rodgers and wondering about him coming back and building it up to a thing. And then you turn on, you know, Good Morning Football this morning, and they're talking about potential trade packages for Denver to acquire Rodgers for next season. This is going to be hanging over their heads. And, you know, Rodgers, Davante Adams, they sort of try to go the last dance route with the social media posts. And maybe it does end up that way for them. Maybe they do make a run. But right now it looks like this could be more of a dark cloud that hangs over that organization. And now every bad throw, every mistake, every interception, every loss, people start wondering about, well, you know, is this going to spin out wildly out of control? Are we really going to, you know, see him in Denver next year? You're going to see the photoshops of Rodgers in different uniforms on Twitter and other social media platforms. I think there's a potential for this to sort of go the other direction for the Green Bay Packers. Now, still very talented, number one. And you look around the rest of the NFC North, Chicago looks to be sort of figuring out when they're going to start Justin Fields. Detroit, even though they had a nice little comeback, they still lost. Minnesota lost to Cincinnati. You know, the NFC North looked there for the taking for the Packers, but with this Rodgers situation, this could linger and it could go in a different direction than those two players were hoping.
You mentioned Justin Fields, and I know it's only one game, and of course this is the only sample size we go after is watching a regular season game. But Mark, that Bears offense just looked different to me when he was the quarterback. They just looked a lot more explosive. And how does everybody seemingly on this planet see it, and the one guy who makes the decision seemingly doesn't, in Matt Nagy? What is taking so long with Justin Fields to be the starter in Chicago?
I mean, my only thought going into that game was Nagy didn't believe that Justin Fields could sort of protect himself, and that, you know, he couldn't get protection, pass protection sorted out before the play, and that's probably not a good recipe when you're going into the Los Angeles Rams and Aaron Donald. But I think that kind of goes out the window now. You know, now going forward, I think you have to give serious consideration to playing Justin Fields and to starting them here in week two, because like you said, George, that offense looked more explosive, looked more dynamic, looked to have more potential when he's on the field. Andy Dalton is a very nice option as a spot starter, a backup quarterback. Maybe the plan here in Chicago was, look, we're going to get through week one, road game, Sunday night, Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, SoFi Stadium's going to be packed. That's not the environment to start Justin Fields. Now we're past that game, Justin Fields, it's your team now. Now it's the time for you to go ahead and to learn these pass protections and to put yourself in a position to be successful and to do the things that an NFL quarterback has to do with the line of scrimmage, because he's an extremely talented quarterback. I loved him coming out of Ohio State. He makes that offense look more dynamic. He gives that offense more potential for big plays. They got past this Rams game. Now I'm hoping that Matt Nagy sees it the way the rest of us see it, and they start Justin Fields going forward.
Mark, locally here, well, sort of locally, the Buffalo Bills dropped their opener to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And is that the recipe for success for any defense in the NFL against a guy who could potentially be the MVP of the league in Josh Allen? Is if you can get pressure with your front four and drop back players, you're ahead of the game, and that's the recipe to slow down guys. Even we saw what the Bucs did to Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. If are you going to see general managers and everybody just concentrating on that defensive line? Because if you can get that pressure with just four guys and drop so many guys back, that's the way to slow down the passing game in today's league. And I think that's the recipe for success, is it not?
I think it is. I mean, that's sort of the magic elixir that general managers, you know, front office people look for when it comes to the, you know, draft time, to free agency. It's why you see players like Clinton Farrell, who was inactive last night for the Raiders, come off the board fourth overall. Or years ago, Deion Jordan from Oregon come off the board fifth overall. It's because, you know, Mike Mayock, when that Deion Jordan pick was made, he said the most important spot on a football field is 5 yards or 7 yards behind the center, the pocket, right? You need a quarterback that can throw from there. You need a left tackle and a right tackle that can protect that spot. And you need pass rushers that can attack it. If you can get pressure with the four guys up front, drop seven into coverage, and if you have the ability to get pressure to such an extent that they're keeping an extra blocker or two in, so now you're playing maybe 7-on-3, 7-on-4 in the secondary, and you can keep dedicated safety help to both sides of the field with all these two high defenses that teams are playing right now. That's how you do it. And so that's what we saw at Pittsburgh, their ability to get pressure with four, drop seven into coverage, change up the coverage looks from time to time, give Josh Allen a different look, move him off the spot, force them to make some tough reads, tough throws, and throw the football away because they don't have numbers on the route concept against the secondary with all the players that are dropping. That's the recipe. The problem is, you know, from a defensive standpoint, how many teams have that ability?
Right.
You know, we even look at a Thursday night, you know, Tampa Bay with that pass rush they had in the Super Bowl, they had to resort to some blitzes in the second half of that game to try to manufacture that pressure on Dak Prescott. And he was able to make throws against those blitzes. It's rare to have teams that have that potential to do it, but if you can, that's the recipe in today's NFL.
Who had a more impressive win, and which team do you believe more in as the season's going to move along here, the Cardinals or the Eagles?
I think it's the Cardinals. You know, I think, you know, watching that Eagles game, I think you saw some nice things from Jalen Hurts if you're an Eagles fan. He did some nice things in the passing game. Nick Sirianni did a good job at, you know, giving him some quick in concepts, some easy reads and throws, some design throws, twin routes, flat routes, and things like that to get the ball out of his hands quickly. He didn't really need to push the ball downfield. But I do think Atlanta's a bit of a team that's struggling right now. And, again, trying hard not to overreact to just one game. But it did look like, you know, Atlanta has some work to do. But then you look at what Kyler Murray did, what the Arizona Cardinals did. I think Murray looked fantastic in the passing game. I was skeptical of Cliff Kingsbury after last season coming into this week. but he looked to be a much better play caller, much better play designer. I think Murray is sort of on the cusp of knocking down that sort of top tier of quarterbacks in today's NFL. And that's a team, Tennessee, that, yeah, their defense had some questions. You know, they made some additions there. Yes, they lost Arthur Smith to Atlanta, but they had Julio Jones, Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, still a talented offense. But Arizona, with what they put together on offense, with what Chandler Jones and that defense was able to do, the pressure that Jones was able to get, we just had the discussion, right, getting pressure to four. Mm-hmm. Arizona can do that. So both teams had good wins. I think Arizona is the one that I'm believing in right now.
Mark, is it comforting in such uncertain times that the AFC South continues to be a dog's breakfast?
Yeah, I mean, it sort of makes our jobs a little easier, right? Like, we know we can go there and say, look, man, this is a big question mark of a division. I expected to see more from Jacksonville. You know, I expected to see more from Indianapolis. Houston, I don't think anybody had the Houston Texans as your division leader after week one, but
Right. Credit
to them, you know, Dave Culley and company, they did a good job to get ready for that game. You know, they put a nice performance. Tyrod Taylor made some nice plays, but yeah, that's a tough division. Although, you know, you would expect Indianapolis and Tennessee to be your favorites there, but neither team looked really good here in week one.
Yeah, I don't know about you, Mark, but I'm just not a believer in Carson Wentz at this point. I thought he had all the opportunity.
Yeah, it's really hard.
He just holds on to the football
really
too
hard.
Long and makes bad decisions. I just don't know if that was the right move. And at this point, is Carson Wentz really an upgrade on Phillip Rivers? Because I'm not sure he is.
At this point, right sitting here right now, I don't think he is. And I was somebody that thought Frank Reich would be able to get the best out of him, but certainly been a rough start to this season with a foot injury. Now this loss to Seattle, he didn't look comfortable. He's not sure of what he's seeing. Like you said, holding on to the football too long. I don't know. It is early, but it might be getting late early here for Indianapolis and Carson Wentz.
Before I let you go, did the Dallas Cowboys have the best loss in week one because of what Dak Prescott looked like?
I think so. I think so, George. Their defense looked good, too. I mean, it wasn't great, but it's similar
it
to the Raiders' discussion they got.
Yeah, it wasn't awful,
right?
Right.
That's what you need to see, because it was such a bad defense last year. It was a little bit better, which might be enough. It looks to be, again, a bad division. Dak looked great. That offense is fantastic. You know, I think they didn't want to run the ball because that's a good run defense. Ezekiel Elliott did a good job in the stuff he was asked to do. Those receivers are great. So I think you're right. Dallas, even though they're 0-1, they had the best loss of the week.
Mark Schofield, NFL writer for USA Today's Touchdown Wire. Mark, this was fun. Let's do it again in the future.
Absolutely, George. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. There he goes, Mark Schofield. I think when it comes to the best loss in week one, I think it is Dak and the Cowboys. Yeah, they didn't really run the ball effectively, and pour one out for all you Ezekiel Elliott fantasy football owners, but he looked good coming back from that horrific, horrific injury and having shoulder issues as well. That offense looks explosive. My goodness. What Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb were doing, and he was making those throws, and he's only going to get better as the season moves along here. And the defense was okay, and that's fine for Dallas because their defense was historically bad last season, and that division's going to be super interesting. Now we're hearing Ryan Fitzpatrick's out long-term. We'll see what the Washington football team looks like with Tyler Heinicke under center. Had that really nice playoff game against the Bucs that we all watched. Who knows what the Eagles are with Jalen Hurts and the Giants. I don't think that offensive line is just a train wreck. We'll see what they kind of shake out to be in the NFC East. But if you're a Cowboys fan, at least it's going to be a lot of exciting games this season to watch Dak Prescott chuck the ball around the yard. All right, straight ahead, we'll talk some Maple Leafs. Luke Fox wrote a piece yesterday on his Maple Leafs mailbag. Are the Leafs going to really walk, just let Morgan Rielly walk and use their own rental, which I hate? We'll talk to Luke Fox about that. And later on this hour, the Jags Twitter account is soft as soft can be. We'll do all that next. Sportsnet today, George Russick, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sportsnet today, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. George Russick in all week from 9 to noon. The usual host of this slot, J.D. Bunkus, will join me at 11 o'clock because he has to come on during his vacation. He must. He must talk to you, the listeners, during his vacation. We'll talk to him. And later on this hour, producer Sam will jump back on with me. We'll talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars' Twitter account. As soft as butter in the hot sun. But right now, my friend, your friend, Luke Fox, NHL Maple Leafs writer for Sportsnet.ca, joins us. Luke, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, George. I was at the rink yesterday seeing the Leafs skate for the first time, and it was the NHL media tour, so saw a bunch of NHL players without a Zoom lens between us for the first time since the pandemic. So I'm optimistic. Hockey season is upon us.
I'm glad you're optimistic. With all the Maple Leaf fans I'm sure you've talked to in your personal life, I feel like this is the most jaded, and that's a hard thing to do. This is the most jaded Maple Leaf fans have been heading into a season, and I think their expectations are super low. Are you feeling the same thing?
Oh, yeah. I had my first men's league game last night.
Okay.
And, how'd you do? You know what? I bought a new stick, and it has a goal on it already. So,
wow, look at you.
Nice. Yeah. I might hang it up because, you know, it's so rare. But after the game, you know, a lot of the guys know what I do. So, they're asking me questions and I would absolutely agree with you. You know, Leafs fans are a little jaded. Absolutely. And it's hard to blame them, right? Like five times with this core going to the postseason and not winning a round. And that was probably the most spectacular collapse was to your Habs being up 3-1 and just, not having it, you know, not being able to finish the job. So, you know, we got 82 games now, and really all that matters is what happens after that. So I understand the fan base. I realize that it's like, yeah, we love your skill. We love the fact that Austin Matthews won the Rocket, all these great things. Yes, you finished first in the Canadian division, but we need to see it in the springtime. And you know, I don't blame the fan base for feeling that way.
When it comes to the playoffs, Luke, I'm not completely sold that the Leafs are a playoff team right now.
Ooh.
I think it's going to be tough because they're back.
George.
Luke, when I look at this, I think we can agree that over the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years on paper, this is the weakest roster they have. Can we agree on that?
We cannot agree on that. Because,
really?
And I'll tell you why. Because
right.
I like their defense. I think last year the defense was the best it's been. In a generation or so, and that defense is all coming back. You know, people don't talk enough about what TJ Brody did to solidify this team. And yesterday at the media day, Tyler Toffoli said that when he knew that the Montreal Canadiens were going to win that series is the moment Jake Muzzin went down with a pulled groin and was then able to finish Game 6 and could not play in Game 7. The fact that, you know, Muzzin and Brody, and they still have a year of Riley left, Rasmus Sandin, you got to expect that he's going to step up a little bit. I think this is a decent decor. So I wouldn't say that this is the worst roster they've had with this core. The forwards, I think there's where you maybe have a point because I think this team is going to miss Zach Hyman immensely. They've tried to fill him by committee by bringing in Nick Ritchie and Michael Bunting and Andre Kasha. And, you know, yesterday I was watching Josh Hosang skate with the guys. He's on a PTO. And they seem to be throwing a whole bunch of things at the wall and see what sticks, you know, cheap deals. And hopefully they're able to fill Hyman by committee. But I have my doubts that they're able to do that. I think this team's really going to miss Zach Hyman. So I see what you're saying about up front, but I think the decor, all those guys coming back, is going to make this team a playoff team.
I like Andre Kasha, too. I think that's a very under-the-radar move that may pay some huge dividends because that guy, when he's healthy, was really good with the Ducks, especially early on in his career. The reason why I ask is the goaltending, right? Like, obviously, how much confidence do Leaf fans have in that tandem of Mrazek and Campbell?
Yeah, I think it's mild confidence. It's going to be fascinating. It's been a while, right? Like, basically, the whole Freddie Anderson tenure, if he was healthy, you knew who their starter was. And then now all of a sudden they've gone to the tandem mode. And basically I think Sheldon Keefe is just going to have to ride the hot hand all season. It's going to be a battle. You know, Jack Campbell was their guy in the playoffs, and he played spectacularly, but he's never taken on like a 50, 60 game workload over 82 games. You know, he's never proven to be that guy. And Mrazek has, you know, a whole career of being a tandem guy. He's basically shared a net wherever he's gone, whether that was in Carolina or whether that was in Detroit. He's kind of a streaky goaltender. When he's hot, he looks like he's one of the best in the world, and then he'll go for a month where, you know, you don't want to give him the start because he just doesn't have his game or he's had injury problems. So it's going to be a managing of who's hot and a managing of who's healthy. You know, Kyle Dubas has admitted that basically one of his faults was he kind of overworked Freddie while he was here, and it taxed him too much. So I think it's going to be pretty close to an even split. But I think that's a good thing, the fact that they're not putting all their eggs in one basket. They have two guys that hopefully, you know, get hot at different times, then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and just the whole playoff thing is because they're back in the Atlantic Division. Atlantic Division's good, man. Oof, it's tough. Tampa's right there, obviously. Boston seems like they never drop off, and obviously another year older against that roster will mean something. But the Panthers are an up-and-coming team. I'm not sure what the Habs are going to be in the regular season, but they just got to a Stanley Cup final. The Senators are improving, and yeah, the Red Wings and Sabres are going to suck, but it's a tough road for the Maple Leafs in this division this season, Luke.
It really is, and it's going to be fascinating. I think I look at Boston, and I see, you know, the fact that Tuukka Rask isn't ready to go at the beginning of the season, isn't even signed by them, although that's where he wants to end up. And I wonder about their goaltending. You know, we'll see what Linus Allmark can do with a team that has much higher expectations than Buffalo did. But I think there's a little bit of magic there in that whole group knows that this might be Patrice Bergeron's last year. It's certainly the last year of his current contract. So I think there's going to be a little bit of inspiration going on in Boston. Taylor Hall finally has peace of mind and some term on his deal. I think he could have a nice year. You know, the fact that he finished strong with the Bruins. Tampa, you know, they're my number one seed. I know they basically lost their whole third line due to the cap and some trades. But, you know, they have Hedman, they have Vasilevsky, they have Kucherov, they have Point, they have Stamkos. I just think there's so much star power on that team that they're going to be a force. And like you said, Florida's up and coming, and they gave Tampa a really good run in the playoffs. So it's going to be a battle. I do think the Leafs are going to make the playoffs, but, you know, getting home ice advantage is going to be a huge struggle.
Luke Fox, NHL and Maple Leafs writer for Sportsnet.ca, joining us here on Sportsnet Today. George Russick, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. In your mailbag yesterday, you mentioned that potentially Morgan Rielly could walk here. He's heading into his final year before he hits unrestricted free agency. He's making $5 million a year, and producer Sam and I had the conversation yesterday on the air that I feel like the puck drop on opening night is sort of a soft deadline here. If there isn't a deal done with Morgan Rielly long-term by then, is there a deal to be had with the Maple Leafs long-term here, Luke?
Well, the way Kyle Dubas has been talking sounds like he's in no rush, that he's going to take the patient approach. And it's it's kind of a similar tone, yep, as he struck when he was talking about Zach Hyman and Freddie Anderson last year. And this seems to be the organization's pattern, right? Like we saw it with JVR and Tyler Bozak a few years back. They seem to not be afraid to walk guys out the door. And I think that maybe they've crunched some numbers and said, you know what, Morgan Rielly at $5 million is worth it to us, even if it's only 1 year. And, you know, that comes with some criticism because is that good asset management? And I think if they were serious about trading Morgan Rielly, I don't look at training camp. I look at the draft. When Ryan Ellis got moved, when Rasmus Ristolainen got moved, and those teams got really good returns for defensemen, right? But, you know, part of that was getting futures back. And Kyle Dubas is in a position where he doesn't want futures. He wants to win this season, or quite frankly, his job might be on the line if they don't go deep. So he'd rather, I think, hitch his wagon to Morgan Rielly because he figures there's no better option that can help him right now. And, you know, I've heard him say, you know, that just because Darnell Nurse got this massive contract, and Seth Jones and Zach Werenski, and the price for a defenseman went through the roof. He's hoping, you know, maybe we can get Morgan Rielly on longer term, less money. But I don't know. I this feels like a Hyman scenario to me. It feels like this would be Morgan Riley's chance to really cash in. So, you know, I don't think there's any guarantee that he's coming back. They might just walk him out the door.
But how can they do that? Like, I get it with Hyman, right? Because what are you ultimately getting for Zach Hyman? Right, a draft pick? You're not going to get too much for Zach Hyman if you traded him. But Morgan Rielly, I think we can agree on this, Luke. I think that number starts with a 7 in unrestricted free agency, the deal that he was signed this upcoming summer. I think that's the minimum for a guy like Morgan Rielly, who can play on your number one power play unit and be in your top four. And we saw the ridiculous amounts of money that teams are playing for defensemen. How could the Leafs potentially let a guy, an asset like Morgan Rielly, walk for nothing? I think That's just a bad move by the organization. You can't manage assets like that, because if you were to trade Morgan Rielly, I'm sure you can get a ton for that guy.
I'm sure you could, but most teams are pretty set on their rosters, right? Like I said, I think the time, if they were going to do it, they would have explored it at the draft, and there was no indication that they were even seriously considering it. Like,
wow.
I think he's going to stay. Now, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I think that can be debated, but I'd be shocked. I'd be absolutely shocked if they traded Morgan Rielly. The only scenario is if by the deadline they're out of the race, and then of course you do it just because you want to get something back. But as long as they're in the mix, I'd be shocked if they traded him.
So there's a scenario where they trade him to a team to get that extra year, and they just get a pick for him, for a guy like Morgan Rielly. They're going to let that asset walk out the door.
Well, now you're getting way ahead of ourselves.
But it looks like it's heading that way, right? Unless they sign him to an extension, which obviously could happen at any day, and we don't know. But if I'm Morgan Rielly's camp, and you did a great job of highlighting that his agent's J.P. Barry, and he's a guy that gets a lot of money for his clients, why would Morgan Rielly stay long-term? If he's not signed by puck drop and doesn't want to be here, why the hell would he sign an extension when there's tons of money out there in free agency?
Yeah, I can't argue with you. I mean, J.P. Barry was the one who handled Dougie Hamilton's future. And, you know, Dougie Hamilton said he loved Carolina. Carolina said he loved, they loved Dougie Hamilton,
but
you know.
But they love money more.
But, well, you know, it's life-changing money. It's your one chance to get the kind of contract that sets up you and your family for life. Like, do you blame Zach Hyman for leaving? Toronto kid. Took a discount the first time around. Morgan Rielly absolutely loves being a Maple Leaf, is a leader, is the longest tenured Leaf on the team, has really close friends on that team. But that's a hard thing to walk away. If you're a professional athlete and you have one chance to really knock it out of the park and set your family up financially, and the team you love is coming way under what the competition is offering you, can you blame the athlete? There's a short window to make money.
Absolutely.
A very short window to make money.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't blame the athlete. We would all do that as well. But if you let Morgan Rielly walk for nothing, the Leafs are immediately looking for another Morgan Rielly. And could there be a domino effect, Luke, if they don't re-sign Rielly here, that might lead to a trade of a guy like William Nylander, because you will absolutely have to bolster your blue line? Because are we sure Sandin can be that guy to pick up Morgan Rielly's slack?
We're not sure. But I think that's going to be a major storyline this season. I think Sheldon Keefe and Kyle Dubas have to figure out what they have in Rasmus Sandin. And I know he's young, and I know he's battled some adversity and had his development derailed by a pandemic and all that. But I think we saw a glimpse of the Morgan Rielly succession plan at the end of last season when they were giving Rasmus Sandin some reps on the top power play unit. To me, that said, you know, left shot, skilled offensively, playmaker, tough guy, eager for a larger role on the team, confident. I think they have to find out is this the guy? Because if he is, he's a heck of a lot cheaper than Morgan Rielly's going to be.
I think it's so fascinating what's going to happen with Morgan Rielly. The pressure around this team. That's obviously going to ramp up if this team eventually makes it to the Stanley Cup playoffs. Do you think those questions are going to be asked in the first day of training camp, or we're past that now already? We're looking past that. The players will say the generic. We've looked past it. We're moving towards this season. But how much ramped up pressure is even more on this organization heading into this year? And more specifically, you mentioned it, Kyle Dubas, right? Because I was a guy, I never thought that for a second that they would fire Kyle Dubas here. But is this the make or break year for Kyle Dubas when it comes to not only the pressure on the guy with the guys on the ice, but the general manager himself? Because I don't know, Luke, how this guy survives if they lose in the first round of the playoffs again.
No, you know what? I agree with you. And, you know, I like Kyle, and I think he's done a lot of smart moves and yes. a lot of outside the box things and maximize the cap space and really tweak every advantage that a team like Toronto can have under a hard cap. But this is his vision, right? And when the pandemic came and the cap flattened, he doubled down. He said, no, I'm not trading any member of the core four. I'm sticking with these guys, and I'm hunting for bargains at the fringes. This is his team. And I think he knows it. You know, I think he's ready to go down with the ship. But it's either going to be Kyle Dubas was too stubborn to change and adapt his view in the face of a suddenly flattened cap, or it's going to be this guy stuck to his vision, and despite the doubters, they finally broke through. You know, Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner are young men. William Nylander is a young man. They're going to have other chances. But to me, I think the focus now, if they don't make the playoffs, which you're saying isn't a certain thing, and I would agree it's not certain, if they get booted in the first round, I think it would, you know, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that the pressure would fall on Dubas and Shanahan and Keith. Are they going to be the ones trusted with remaking the next season's roster if they don't have success?
If this team comes off to a slow start, could Sheldon Keefe's job be in jeopardy?
Sure. Like, well, I mean, we're talking hypotheticals here.
Right.
But what if they have a losing record 2 months into the season or a month and a half into the season? This is hot seat time. This is panic time. The city is not going to be happy. You know, having a decent regular season is like the bare minimum right now. If they're second last, or not second last, that's hard to envision. But if they're third or fourth last in the Atlantic and are not playing well and are not looking strong, then sure, I think everything's on the table. But like I said, I think the defense is strong enough. I think they have enough star power up front that I think they're going to be in the mix. I think they're going to perform well. I think they realize how much pressure is on. And I sense that they've put that pressure on internally. They've kind of, you know, hearing Matthews and Marner speak yesterday, I feel like they don't want to, they're kind of blocking out the outside and they want to do it for themselves. What was interesting to me, this has never happened before, but Marner was planning to fly down to Arizona to train with Matthews and work on their chemistry in the summer. And that had never happened before. You know, Austin was always in Scottsdale and Mitch was here in Toronto, and they'd work out separately and then get together maybe a week or two before camp. But they were going to spend time in the summer until Austin needed the wrist surgery. And I think Austin also said that they've been talking a lot throughout the summer. So I think there's an internal drive here to finally get over the hump.
Well, I'm sure a lot of listeners are screaming at their radio just talking about the first round. But it kind of dawned on me when we were having this conversation, Luke, is the first round good enough for this team? Shouldn't this team be competing for a Stanley Cup? Is just a first-round playoff win enough to buy this group and this general manager more time? Because I don't even think that feels like it's enough.
I think I agree with you, George. To me, the bar, like, they've been together so long and the expectations have been so high that I think, you know, I think they need to win a couple rounds. I don't think they necessarily need to win the Cup, but I think they need to win a couple runs, rounds, and look strong in the Eastern Conference Final. And if they lose that, so be it. Or maybe if they lose the second round in seven to Tampa, but look like they're right there, maybe right. that's enough. But yeah, one round minimum.
Oof, it's going to be an interesting time in Leafland. And if they get off to a hot start, everyone will be back on the bandwagon, Luke, because that's how it works with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Luke Fox, NHL Maple Leafs writer for Sportsnet.ca. Luke, great stuff. Thanks for this, pal.
All right. Have a great day, George.
Yeah, the pressure on this organization, the general manager, the core of this team. And I don't get the whole Morgan Riley thing. It's about asset management, right? You're going to let a guy like Morgan Riley walk to free agency for absolutely nothing? I don't know how you run your team like that. I don't know. Like, Zach Hyman was a special case to me. Because what are you getting? What you're going to get in return wouldn't be the value what Zach Hyman brings to the Maple Leafs. I understand that. And you can have the same argument for Morgan Riley. But you can't let a defenseman of Morgan Riley's caliber walk for nothing, especially with how the premium is set on defenseman of Morgan Riley's caliber in the NHL. Because what is Morgan Riley going to make as an unrestricted free agent? I don't know, at least $7 million, probably $8 million. There'll be teams that want a Morgan Riley and will bring him on immediately if he hits free agency. And Kyle Dubas and this team is just going to let him walk because that's their own quote-unquote rental? I don't know. If I'm the Leafs, you got to keep that guy here long term, because the second Morgan Riley's gone, you'll be looking for another Morgan Riley. Does he have his warts defensively? He absolutely does. Is he a true top three defenseman who you can put on your number one power play? Absolutely. Are those guys at a premium in the NHL? Absolutely. I just don't know how you let a guy like that walk for nothing. You can't do that. If you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, if you have to trade him, so be it. You can't let him walk for nothing and get a meaningless draft pick to a team that wants to sign him to an extra year next summer. You absolutely cannot do that if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I don't care that Kyle Dubas potentially could be his last year as a general manager if this team doesn't have success. And he's like, screw it, I'm going to ride with Morgan Riley. I don't care what the future is. You can't run your team like that. Brendan Shanahan has to step in and say, you can't run your team like that. You can't let an asset like Morgan Riley walk away for nothing. You just can't. Straight ahead, the Jags' Twitter account is super soft, but I think we'll talk a little more Leafs with Sam McKee. We'll do that next. Sportsnet today, George Russick, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sportsnet today. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, George Russick, in all week from 9 to noon. Straight ahead, the host of Good Show, usually in this time slot, J.D. Bunkus, going to jump on during his vacation because he's dying to talk sports on the radio. He was away for one day, and he asked to jump on the radio to talk about sports, talk about the Blue Jays, week one of the NFL. Maybe we'll touch on this Morgan Riley conversation as well. Producer Sam McKee joining me as well. I think we got to leave this Morgan Riley conversation for later on in the 11 o'clock hour because I don't think we have enough time right now. What do you think?
Can I just say one thing?
Sure.
We just got a text on the line saying Riley is not worth $7 to $8 million. So, like, what do you think he's worth then? You don't think he's as worth as much as Darnell Nurse? Darnell Nurse got paid $9 million. You don't think he's worth as much as Seth Jones? Seth Jones got $9 million. Zach Werenski got over $8 million. Like, you think he's gonna sign here for under seven? Like, it's just, what, you gotta give your head a shake here. It's gonna be a big deal. It's not gonna be like he's gonna take a hometown discount. He already did that. So I don't know. People just have their head at a whack about what he's worth, in my opinion.
Yeah, let's talk about that more in the 11 o'clock hour because there's lots to unpack here. And I want to talk to you about a text we got earlier about a specific tattoo. We'll do that later on in the program as well. But I know you were glued to this game this past Sunday in the NFL. You were glued to the Jags and Texans. I knew you were. Like, you were texting.
I had a bit of an eye on it because I was interested in
Trevor Lawrence. Yeah, he's got a weird face. Anyway, Trevor Lawrence made his debut, the number one overall pick. Jags lost to the Texans, 37-21, and we talked about it on Inside the Lines. I don't know how you take the Jags as a favorite on the road. That was just not smart for a lot of you out there, but that's fine. We told you not to do it. So the Jags Twitter account went out there, and there was a lot of negativity out there in Duval County this past Sunday with Jags fans disgruntled at a loss against the Houston Texans, which a lot of people consider maybe the worst roster in all of the NFL. So what did the Jags Twitter account do? Because it follows a lot of its own fans. They followed around They unfollowed around 200 people, Sam. You said something negative about the team. Their social media team went and unfollowed a lot of fans. They went from following you to unfollowing you. And I don't like when teams do that. Just, fans are allowed to have an opinion if you're not playing well, right? If you're swearing and you're being crazy, that's fine. That's a lot different. But they unfollowed a lot of fans. What the Tennessee Titans did was fantastic. Every fan that the Jags unfollowed, the Titans went in and followed them. What do you think of that?
I mean, the Twitter stuff with a lot of these professional sports teams has gotten completely out of hand, in my opinion. Like, a lot of them are trying to reinvent the wheel, and this is no different than that. That is one
this
of the most
petty,
things I've ever
heard. This is petty, though. This is petty by Jacksonville, is it not?
Well, like, I don't know. I guess the guy who works for the team, sends the tweets for the Jaguars Twitter account, thinks he plays on the team. I don't know. Like, how do you get so offended by that? Who cares?
Or maybe Sean Conn, the owner's like, unfollow all these people. Anyway, go ahead.
No, it's absurd. It's absurd. So, I don't think there's anything other to say than that's petty and absurd. And guess what? The Jacksonville Jaguars stink, and they're going to stink this year bad. So, there you go.
That's right. And hat tip to the Tennessee Titans for having the onions to follow all those fans when they were getting their ass kicked by the Arizona Cardinals at home. They had a disgusting week one loss. All right, we'll have that Morgan Riley conversation. My friend, your friend, J.D. Bunkus, will join us straight ahead because he needs to be on the radio after one day of vacation. We'll talk to Bunk straight ahead. We'll talk about that Morgan Riley conversation, you and I. And we had a text in that's fantastic, talking about a specific tattoo and should it get removed. And do you have a tattoo yourself that you totally regret and want to get it removed? And we'd love to hear from you as well. 590-590, name and location. One more hour to go of Sportsnet today. That's Sam. I'm George. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
On the other side of the street I knew, stood a girl that looked like you. I guess that's deja vu, but I thought this can't be true, cause you moved to West LA or New York or Santa Fe or wherever to get away from me.
Sportsnet today. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. George Russick here. Later on this hour, we'll dive more into that Morgan Riley conversation with producer Sam McKee. Got an interesting text I want to share about a tattoo gone awry. And if you got a tattoo that you want removed and you're kind of embarrassed about, shoot me a text, 590-590. Let us know what it is and where it's at. Name and location, please. I would love to hear from you. The host of Good Show is J.D. Bunkus, Monday to Friday, 9 to noon here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He's on vacation this week, hence why I'm on the radio. One day into his vacation, he has to come on and talk about sports. Why don't you take some time off and relax and recharge? Like, what is your deal?
I like to relax by watching sports. I don't know what to tell you. It's my favorite hobby. It's my favorite pastime. I like sit there. You know, I actually do have nights where I know I don't have a show or I'll be off on vacation and I'll say to myself, you know, I'm not going to watch this Blue Jays game tonight. There's 162 of them. I'm going to watch a movie or read a book. And then, like, 7 o'clock out of just habit, I'm there. And then I watch the whole thing and I have no regrets.
Well, can't do it. I had Laura Armstrong on earlier in the show, JD. And I talked about how surreal it is to watch the Blue Jays the last couple weeks. Like, if we could go back in time and I play my lame game, if I could turn back time, to late August and I would say, hey, guess what? The Blue Jays are going to go, they're going to win 15 of their next 17 and be in the number one wild card spot in the middle of September. You would have said what?
Oh, my God, man. I would have said thank you. Thank you, Blue Jays. Thank you for saving us in September and giving us things to do. I got to tell you, there's been an exhaustion with people lately. Like, the summer's over. It went by so fast. And I know that everybody says that, but summer this year just cruised by. And we're heading into this stupid, uncertain time where we're not sure what's up with Delta. People are just exhausted by anti-vax protests and mandates and all these different things. There was supposed to be like this unbelievable optimism around vaccines and how we were going to get back to normal life. And yet here I am still sitting on a headset in my apartment.
And I don't know when that's going to change, and a lot of people don't know when that's going to change. And I feel like that has weighed on people a little bit differently. And we do live in Toronto where there are greater restrictions, and for a lot of people that's what's wanted. But for others, you know, there's a different level of I want to say just, yeah, fatigue that comes with that. And the Blue Jays have come along when things have been, and I don't mean to take this so deep, but I really do kind of feel this way. The Blue Jays were this team with all these incredible individual seasons. Everybody was on the Vlad train. People were talking about Bo solidifying himself as a shortstop. Alek Manoah has been brilliant coming up. They end up with Marcus Semien, the free agent signing of the year, if it's not for Robbie Ray, who's in a dead heat for a Cy Young race. And you're looking around going, how is this team not in the playoffs when they have this much talent? And they win, what is it, 15 of their last 17 games in the most crucial time of the year when we had all these questions about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and whether he could hold up for an entire regular season. All of a sudden, he's mashing home runs. We wondered, you know, what kind of a leader George Springer would be with it. And guys out there on one leg coming up with big hits. Marcus Semien has, I think, become, like, as far as a guy in one season becomes a fan.
And oh, favorite, boy, we lost. Are you there?
I don't know if I can remember anyone outside of Donaldson since I've been a fan who's done it quite like this. Yeah. Sorry. Can you not hear me?
No, we got you. You were George. Just a little wonky there for a second.
No?
Hello? JD, are you there? Can you hear me? JD. Okay, good.
Oh.
Okay, sorry, continue. You got a little wonky for a second. It's okay.
Yeah. Okay. No,
hello?
I'll wrap that up anyway. Just by saying that I think it's incredible, but there are all these other layers to it. Am I there or not?
Yeah, you're on the radio. Yeah, we're good. You just kind of cut out there for a little bit. You're good. We're all good. You're right. There are a ton of layers.
You keep saying, are you there? Are you good? I keep getting thrown off, bro.
Anyway, you're good. You're good.
I'll wrap up that to say that I think that this is an incredible, incredible run.
Yeah, and
yeah.
The thing is,
incredible
too,
run,
right?
Incredible team.
Yeah. And I talked about this yesterday. It doesn't feel like 2015 was incredible, right? It was remarkable. But it felt like it was fleeting, right? This is like, I look at this team and I watch this team and I'm like, man, what is the future going to look like too? Because not only this year, potentially, and I talked about it, JD, you get hot, you win that wild card game, who knows how far this team could go. Maybe they get to the World Series. I don't know, because the hottest teams in baseball heading into the playoffs generally do really well. Who knows what the sky's the limit on this team. But just the future of what this organization is going to look like for the next few years, we could be seeing this for years to come, and I think that's just the icing on the cake in all of this.
I have a really hard time seeing how this doesn't continue, because I think the Jays are going to go all in on trying to keep Semien and Ray. I just don't know how they could go in a different direction than that. And like, knowing where they're at budget-wise, you've got to think that prospect, money, all these things, the excitement of the fan base, that everyone already has the playbook with when it comes to the Blue Jays. When you have these moments, you push in, you put money in, you send prospects out the door. Hell, they already did it by sending out Austin Martin and Semien Woods-Richardson to get 1 year of Berríos, or an extra year of Berríos. Yeah, I do think that this is going to be sustainable. My only thing would be that I'm very much now locking into this moment because of that still pendulum swinging over the top of Semien and Ray. Knowing how critical those two guys are to this team this season, I'm not counting those chickens. I'm hoping that those chickens return, but I can't bank on that. And I just think like how this team has developed and how much just revolves around them that I'm so locked into right now. And knowing, like, you know, I say this a lot on the show, but I've talked about this with people around fighting and Ariel Helwani before, how the most exciting thing when it comes to a fighter is watching the rise of a fighter, because the expectations are low, they're surprising you all the time, it's fresh, it's new, there's no baggage. And that's how I sort of feel about this Jays team, is that watching Vladdy do this at his age, I don't know if Vladdy's ever going to hit this many home runs again. It's an insane amount of home runs. I think he might. He could. Really good. But this is just very special. And seeing all these guys do this at this age, and seeing a guy like Teoscar Hernandez be on a winner, and seeing Lourdes Gurriel come out of his shell and just rake in September, like, these things are, to me, very, very, very special right now. And so I just, this is how I'm feeling about this team. I'm just loving them every single night. I'm just enjoying this every single night.
Yeah, it's absolutely fun to watch. And I don't know there is such a thing as a measuring stick series in baseball, because it's such a long season. But if they beat up on the Rays here for the next two games like they did last night, I don't know what to think anymore. Like, is the division out of the realm of possibility? I know there are 8 games out right now, and there's only like 18 games to go, and that seems like a very, very low percentage. But they sweep the Rays here the next two games, JD, the way this team is playing, why is the AL East title out of the question?
Because even if they sweep their six games back,
and they got to win pretty much every game.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I'm taking playoffs.
At this
playoffs
point, here. Though, they play the Twins playoffs, and though. Orioles. That's 10 yeah. games against the Twins and Orioles. They could conceivably go 8-2 in those games. Watch out.
Yeah, they could. They could. I'm just, at this point, I'm elated to see them potentially hosting a wild card game that I will 100% be at. You know, I 8 games feels like I almost a little too greedy. I'm just still worried about them actually making the playoffs, right? Like, yeah. Can they just make the playoffs? I don't have any visions of the Rays. I'm still looking down the standings, and I watched the Red Sox lose last night. Mariners beat them. They closed it out. I hated seeing the Yankees have their comeback. That scares the crap out of me. Jays still have their series against them. I'm not counting the Yankees out. I'm still afraid of the Mariners, who remain plucky and just break. Mariners have this vibe around that team where they, and you don't see this in baseball too often, where it really feels like they all play for each other. It doesn't feel as individual as with some other teams. I'm kind of writing off the A's, but that makes me feel bad even just saying it out loud. But either way, it's like I'm still watching the teams below them more than I'm watching the teams above.
Who's the matchup, if you could pick it today, that if the Jays get to the wild card game, who's the matchup you want? Red Sox or Yankees? Assuming that those are one of the teams that are in.
Well, I would pick Red Sox purely because they don't have Gerrit Cole, right?
The Yankees have the ability to work out the rotation if they got to win games to have Gerrit Cole pitch in that game.
If there's no Gerrit Cole, I would want the Yankees. If there is Gerrit Cole, I would want the Red Sox. Again, all these things are fluid, but the Red Sox just scare me a little bit more. I don't know what, but their bats do. Their lineup just is deeper, and I think that those guys have had some just scarring wins over the Blue Jays. Maybe it's the, you know, hubris that comes from a 4-game sweep at Yankee Stadium, but I feel like the Jays pitching has navigated that lineup pretty well for most of the season. So like, I'm just even thinking about what Matt's just did to them, what Manoah has done to them all season long. And I would say that the Yankees don't scare me as much as the Red Sox do, but the prospect of facing Gerrit Cole, I just don't like. The one, you know, great thing about the Yankees right now, if you are projecting forward, God, this is so cursy, George. Why are we doing this curse segment?
No, but stop thinking. I like to be positive Pete sometimes. Yeah. JD, and why can't we talk about these sort of things?
We can. It's just I when I go this far down the rabbit hole of it, I'm starting to get a little nervous.
You know,
I'm like,
because it's fun. That's why. Instead of being miserable, and we were all staring down the barrel. We were all staring down the barrel of meaningless September games, and that is the worst thing. Not only for fans, but everybody who works in this business. Nobody wants to watch lame duck September baseball, and all of a sudden, this team is far and away the hottest team in baseball. And why can't we have all this fun, JD? Stop running on the parade and stop worrying about jinxes.
No, never. The athletes do it, and so do the closest thing to athletes, which is me, you know? It's athletes, and then I'm just like this slight, you know, playing card between the two. Then there's me down in the next tier with my superstitions. No, I feel like the Yankees are the better matchup. It's just Gerrit Cole. So you're right. If you remove that from the equation, which is just a massive what if, that's the answer to the question.
I love it. JD Bunkus is the host of Good Show here Monday to Friday, 9 to noon on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Joining us here on Sportsnet today, I'm George Russick. This is Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Let's play more fun Blue Jays playoff talk here because they're so ridiculous lately. If you're setting up your rotation for a DS series, assuming they get past the wild card, which is a big if, is Hyunjin Ryu one of your first three starters?
No, that's been established for a long time now. Like, quite a long time. And I don't think that there's really anything wrong with that, by the way. And I don't mean, I hated when people did this with the Dickey thing, and he's not Dickey, but how everyone said with R.A. Dickey, they moved the goalposts so quickly from Jays traded away top prospects because they thought they were getting an ace knuckleballer who was going to age extremely well. And as soon as he got here, all the people who carried water for the Blue Jays as a like full-time profession kept telling you that R.A. Dickey gave you 200 innings, and 200 innings was worth it, and you know how hard it is to get a guy who can give you 200 innings and blah, 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 and who cares if it's always, hey, look, the ERA is just over 4, but that's fine. That's really good. You'd love to have a pitcher like that, but right, it's about expectations. So to me, Hyunjin Ryu's season has been a bit of a disappointment. There was a moment where I thought we were being too critical of him. There was a moment where I thought, you know, we weren't being appreciative enough. He's been good, but not great. And he's sort of paid to be great in the first 2 years of his contract. That's kind of the deal. And his ERA now, I think, is 4, right? Or slightly above 4. And he has really hurt them in some big moments. So, yeah, he's been great in some starts. Some nights you feel like if he can just get out of the first inning, he's going to give you 6 almost clean. Like, he's not bad. So Ryu is good. If Ryu is in a playoff game, I'm definitely not going to be upset about it. I just think that one of the stories of this season was coming in, everyone thought Ryu was going to have to be the Ryu of last year because we weren't sure what the starting rotation looked like. And if you remember the season before, the shortened season, the 60-game season, it was Ryu and bums. Like, it was really, really, really bad to the point where he came into the season and he was obviously the most important guy. Like, obviously, the most important starter. Tons of expectations, and those expectations were ace. But then everybody else stepped up and was amazing. And so, no. I think if you're stacking it right now, 1, 2, 3, I would say Ray is 1, Manoah is 2, and Berríos is 3. That's how I would see it. Okay. I know some people wouldn't feel that way about Manoah, but I just think that, if I'm honest, I think it's closer between 1 and 2 between Ray and Manoah than I do think it's between 2 and 3 with Berríos and Manoah. And that's... Yeah, I don't even think that that's actually a hot take when you really break things down.
Do you want some really hard-hitting sports talk question for you coming up right here?
Yeah, but I need football talk here too, George. Okay, I need to talk football with you.
Yeah, we'll talk football here in a sec. I just have to ask you, because I was thinking about this last night, because this is how my stupid Serbian brain works. If you had to choose between getting punched in the face by Vlad Jr. or Alek Manoah, who are you taking?
Oh, Vlad Jr., no question. It's not even, like, but like why? Infinitely. I'll take five.
But why Vlad?
Well, because have you ever seen a pitcher throw a punch? Like, look at what they do for a living. They throw their one hand extremely fast across their body. Like, you know what that translates to? First, right. Like, there's a billion reasons why. Manoah is bigger. Manoah is stronger. Manoah's from Florida and wasn't raised with, you know, money, was poor. I can't believe this question. This is the most obvious. This is truly the most obvious answer.
The mitts on Vlad Jr.
This is the most obvious answer of anything in the history of this station. Like, there is no less obvious answer to a question. It's like, bigger guy, pitcher from Florida, grew up tough, is the guy that's always on the top step barking versus the guy who's like chilled out and really wouldn't want to hurt you. Like, no, man, it's obviously Manoah. Manoah would crash your skull into like tiny little pieces. Vlad would be like, I don't want to do this to you, buddy. And he'd kind of, I think he'd ease up on you. Like, I think Vlad is that kind of guy.
All right, who'd you rather get punched in the face by at the radio station, Scotty Mac or Ben?
Oh, Ben, for sure. Ben is one of the, like, weakest guys I've ever met in my entire life. Like, he just doesn't even really have an upper body. It's like, you know, like, oof. Sometimes I watch him, like, struggle to push a door open, and you're like, okay, man, like, you want some help? He's like, it's windy. I'm like, we're inside. But anyways, no, definitely Ben.
All right, let's get to some football talk. All this talk of the AFC West, sorry, the NFC West, looked fantastic. 4-0 on the weekend. Cardinals impressed in Tennessee. Matthew Stafford looked fantastic for the Rams. The Niners almost blew it against the Lions, but that game was out of reach, but they looked really good. And your Seahawks went into Indianapolis and put a beatdown on the Colts. Where are you at with how you're feeling about your team? Because all those other teams, people want to jump on the bandwagon, but there's good old Russell Wilson cooking with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, and they look damn good in that win in Indianapolis. Who's the class of the NFC West, J.D. Bunkus?
I feel, I hate saying this take because it makes me become a brother in arms with a fan base that I will always despise because they took a Super Bowl from my team. But Seahawks and Seahawks have entered that Steelers zone where it's just not fun to pick them for things. You just go, like, you overlook them because they're not as sexy as some of the teams in the division. Ooh, the new look Browns. Oh, they got so much talent everywhere and all the talent of the Browns. And did you know they signed Jadeveon Clowney? And oh, actually, I do want to talk about the Browns later too and how good I actually think they looked. But it just goes to the point of we spent this entire offseason talking about the Ravens and the Browns and even to, like, Jamar Chase, obviously. And meanwhile, the Steelers were just there. You know, they were just around. And everyone, they were all of a sudden in your fantasy league. And then all of a sudden, like, three receivers got picked. And you go, huh. And they took Najee Harris. And everyone, the only thing you heard about the Steelers was the offensive line. And then they go into Buffalo and they completely shut them down. And TJ Watt's like, did you guys forget that I am arguably the best player in, like, on defense in the NFL? Like, that actually might be a thing. And I know that, again, we much prefer to talk about sexy Browns players, Myles Garrett, but I'm TJ Watt, and I keep doing this, and I just wrecked an entire game plan for a Buffalo Bills offense that everybody was freaking out about all offseason. And the same thing goes for the Seahawks, where they win almost every year. They're always putting up a winning record. They hosted a playoff game, like, and yet everyone looks at the Niners. Ooh, Kyle Shanahan, do you know he likes to do different run concepts? Wow, he does so many different tricky things. He's such a little trickster. And same with Sean McVay. He likes to add an extra wide receiver all the time. He likes to go three wide. He's got four wide. He's this crazy guy. He's so crazy. They got Matthew Stafford. Rams look great, too. Again, meanwhile, the Seahawks added some quiet pieces to the offensive line. They brought back a really good running back in Chris Carson, who defines the offense and steamrolled that team. Even though, again, everyone loves to talk about Jonathan Taylor because he's younger and he's new and he's sexy. Guess who played better than Jonathan Taylor on Sunday? Chris Carson. You know why? Because he's probably better than Jonathan Taylor. And every Colts fan out there is just like, what happened to our guy? How did this freaking happen? Because the Seahawks are always good. Foundations in the NFL matter. It's why I feel so stupid coming into these weeks where, like, I'm like, I think the Falcons are going to be good this year. I get gaslit just like the rest of you when it comes to these offseason narratives. I'm sitting there watching the Falcons game. I'm like, why did I think these guys were going to be good? I watched their defense last year. They sucked. I watched Matt Ryan for the last 4 years, and he's sucked. And they lost Julio Jones, and they added a rookie tight end and Arthur Smith, and now I'm supposed to expect them to be Super Bowl champions or fringe playoff contenders? Like, I'm an idiot. I'm an idiot like all the rest of you. So I love the Seahawks. I love the Steelers. I love teams with good bones, good foundations, just winning records year after year after year. And it's just like LeBron with MVP stuff, as people stop talking about you because they're bored of you. There's no narrative to spin here. The only Seahawks story to tell during the offseason was, is Russell Wilson going to leave? Then he stayed, and the team basically stayed status quo from a group that was looking pretty good last year, minus their best player, who couldn't figure it out with an old offensive coordinator that needed to go. So I thought the Rams looked best in the division. I really did. I thought that game was a real statement, even against a crappy, crappy Bears team. Just having Matthew Stafford throw more, 40-yard plays than they had thrown all of last season with Jared Goff, that was eye-opening to me. But their defense didn't look all that spectacular, and they gave up some chunk plays to Andy Dalton and Fields, and I know that'll come later in the year, but I wasn't all that impressed with the Niners. Then they lost Jason Verrett, the corner, who is one of their most important players on defense, like by far their number one corner. So I actually think that the Niners are already dead in the water in this division. They got the worst quarterback, and they suffered
because he's made of porcelain.
Yeah, I spent a lot of money on Trey Sermon in my fantasy league, so that guy better play next week. I don't want to hear any more about Elijah something like that.
Elijah Mitchell.
I banked on that. Yeah, I don't want that anymore. And then I think the Cardinals are going to be the same sort of team that they were last year, which is that they're dangerous and they can put up a ton of fantasy stats, but when they play the big dogs of the NFL, that they're going to be missing just that little extra bit. They're the most unproven of them all. So
yeah,
I'm not freaking out about the week one performance against the Titans.
I think if Chandler Jones is healthy and he's playing for a contract paired with J.J. Watt, that front of the Cardinals is scary.
Yeah.
They're good.
I don't trust the J.J. Watt thing.
Yeah, and Buda Baker's good too. Like Isaiah Simmons could potentially blossom into that guy, into that unicorn that he is. He played very well. Cardinals are a big wild card to me because if they start getting things together, they can be super dangerous because this is a big show me year for Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. You said you wanted to talk about the Browns, and the Browns did Browns things. Nick Chubb fumbled the ball. The Scottish Hammer, Jamie Gillen, muffed that punt. And if there's one thing that brings me so much joy, two things when I watch football. When a punter or a kicker or a holder muffs the ball and then they have to pick up and run with it and they have that look of sheer terror on their face because they're like, oh God, I have to try to run with this now. I have no chance.
Yeah.
But the Browns shot themselves in the foot and should have won that game against the Chiefs on Sunday.
So I'm a little torn on the Browns. Number one is that I actually kind of sneaky like the Browns. They're just one of those teams that I relate with when it comes to sports. I just know
because
what it's like
to... Because their fan base was so downtrodden for so many years?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I've cheered for losers. Like, I've cheered for the Mariners. I've cheered for the Blue Jays. I cheer for the Maple Leafs. Like, I've cheered for the Raptors. I cheer for a Seattle Supersonics team that got stolen. Like, I've had some pretty rough sports goes in my lifetime, and I see the Browns, and I feel for them. Like, I really do. And I want them to win. I want the Browns to be good. And the Browns are good. But I thought that this offseason was a little... Maybe it's just because we were coming off this Leafs year where I did the whole thing about, like, oh, my God, the Leafs are good, and oh, my God, the Leafs are going to walk through the first two rounds of the playoffs, and oh, my God, hype, 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 hype. And I saw a little bit of that from the Browns fan base, and I guess I was trying to do a little bit of, hey, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, everybody, it usually doesn't go this way. It usually isn't as easy as, well, we made the playoffs, and now we're going to win the Super Bowl, or we're right there in the contenders category, and I needed to see it from Baker. But I'll say two things about the Browns. Out of all the teams that impressed me through the first three quarters anyways of their games, I would say it was the Saints and the Browns. But the Browns, it was just everything was crisp. Everything was beautiful. Baker threw some balls on, like, there was that one out route that he threw, I want to say, in the second quarter or the third quarter. It was beautiful. That's as good as I've ever seen Baker Mayfield play. Like, truly, he was unbelievable in that game for moments. Like, perfect. The timing, and you thought, you know, this is a quarterback who's starting to finally come into his own, and this is why this guy was drafted so high and that so many teams coveted him, that we sort of sleep on him a little bit because that quarterback class, again, was filled with very, very sexy names, and he is a Browns quarterback, so we're sort of all waiting for it to fail. I don't think he's a failure. I think that he's good. Nick Chubb is spectacular. Hunt is spectacular. They had playmakers that came up with plays. I loved what I saw from the Browns. I was blown away. I wrote down in my notebook like five times that I was just completely enamored by what the Browns were doing. I like Stefanski. There's just a lot. Their defense is loaded with guys who have talent. They just suffered one of the toughest things to deal with in all of professional sports, which is when you have a lead against the Kansas City Chiefs and trying to protect it. And they didn't just, like, everyone's talking about the end of that game and Baker not making the throw. I think it takes reps for good football teams to be able to deal with what they dealt with. You go up 9, and literally, a few seconds later, Tyreek Hill is in your end zone doing the peace sign to you. That's just a gut punch. There was so many moments in that game where you thought, oh, the Chiefs are going to take over now, the Chiefs are going to take over now, and the Browns kept counterpunching, and I just think they ran out of counterpunches. I would say that my biggest concern was that Baker looked a little shaken, and after he had looked so he had this resolve all game long. It sort of faded at the very end. And then there's the one play everyone's talking about where he didn't have enough arm to make it. And you know if it's Mahomes, he does. And so that's the big difference between those two teams. But I thought if you're a Browns fan, you're a little... You're obviously devastated knowing that you could have had that win and knowing what it would have meant to your season and the buzz around you and all these different things and to close it. But I don't know. That team looked pretty dangerous to me. And I don't feel like that's something where they're going to lose and now go and suck. I think that's like, oh, I can't believe we lost that game. But now we're going to obliterate the Texans, obliterate the Bears, obliterate the Vikings. Like, they've got a soft schedule in front of them. The Browns feel like, to me, that they are about to go on some type of like 6, 7, 8 game win streak, because like that's the team I saw for the vast majority of that game, a one that is ready to kind of jump up a level in the NFL.
If they can solve their issues in the secondary, because I think that's the weakest part of their team, because it still is a little shaky, and we've seen teams able to put some big numbers up against up that secondary, and we saw what Patrick Mahomes did. Obviously, Tyreek Hill is incredible, and he's a matchup nightmare. But yeah, if they can shore up that secondary, I think you're right about the Cleveland Browns. But again, I still don't trust Baker at this point. I just don't yet, and I need to see it more from Baker. He was great down the stretch. He was good in the playoffs. But I need to still see a little more from Baker. Oh, obviously, the Browns need to see more from Baker because they haven't re-upped him yet. And this is a big show-me year for the Browns. Real quick, too, Dallas Cowboys, to me, had the best loss of the week because Dak looked like Dak again, and that offense is scary. And their defense looks okay, and I think that's good enough if their defense is okay, especially with Fitzmagic going down for Washington, that they could potentially win the NFC East.
I like this best loss of the week. Like, I like the way that that sets up. You're right. The Cowboys, my only thing with the Cowboys is that they lost Michael Gallup, and they also have a defense that's just as bad as I thought that they were going to be. And so they're going to be able to get into shootouts, and I'm thrilled about Dak, but I just don't think that that formula with that defense is going to work out. If I'm doing best loss, I would pick the Browns or the Patriots, like one of those two teams. Because if it's not for Harris and Stevenson losing, you know, two fumbles, they don't lose that game. And if anybody watched that, I am terrified now of the resurgence of Patriots fans who all cheated and jumped on the Tom Brady bandwagon when their team sucked and celebrated his wins as though they were like their wins, even though he left their organization, because Patriots fans are kind of frauds. They're just so front runners that they don't even know how to cheer for a bad team anymore. So like, that's just how it is. But I thought Mac Jones looked awesome. And if you're a Patriots fan and you watch that game, like, he was way better than Tua. And if you're a Dolphins fan, you're like, boy, we got so lucky to win that game. I can't believe we eked that thing out. But that was Mac Jones's what was start for him? Like his 20? No, that was his first start ever. Right. I'd be pretty scared of the Patriots and the quarterback they drafted. And I'm kind of hoping this is my. I had a couple hot takes out of this week. Like, one, I hated to see that everybody had it. It was so basic, but I thought Aaron Rodgers was like trying to lower his trade value so that it wouldn't cost as much for Denver to trade for him.
His body language? Jesus, Aaron Rodgers.
Everything about Aaron Rodgers. Everything about Aaron Rodgers. I know that now we're not supposed to like discuss how people look because it's body shaming, but he looked gaunt. He looked like he had been sitting in a car where someone had the windows rolled up and they smoked cigarettes in it all off season. Like, that's how Rodgers, he looked frail. He looked thin. His hair didn't look good. He just looked bad. And he looked completely disinterested in that game. And I thought, wow, okay. Your team said that this was the most important, season for you guys, that you've been overlooked and that you've got this big chip on your shoulder. And I couldn't help but feel like Rodgers didn't just become that as a quarterback. And that part of what happened in that game, one, was that the Saints completely shocked them with how good they were, because they were amazing. They look great. You can't take anything away from them. But, yeah, I just thought, you know, a hot take. If I'm going with, like, a hot take, it was Aaron Rodgers is already planning his exit to that Denver team and wants to lower the trade value so they don't have to give up as many things so that he can have more around him. Like, doing the Carmelo Anthony thing. Although, yeah, that didn't really work out. But What was the other thing? Is we were going to do that, and oh yeah, worst best winner was the Patriots, and I just I really think that the Patriots could be something this year. Like I think that they could be something.
Okay. I'm not buying the Patriots as of yet like you are, but again, you're right. It was a solid performance by Mac Jones. And if I'm a Dolphins fan, I'm just waiting for the Deshaun Watson thing to sort itself out, because I feel like that's just inevitable that guy's going to end up in South Beach with the Dolphins, and Tua might end up with the Houston Texans. J.D. Bunkus is the host of Good Show, Monday to Friday, right here, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, 9 a.m. till noon. Thanks for doing this, pal. Go back to your vacation, okay?
Yeah, this was fun. This was fun.
I enjoyed
unload
it.
The hot takes and then leave. See you, Georgie. Talk to you
later.
See you,
pal. There he goes. J.D. Bunkus is back next week for Good Show. Straight ahead, producer Sam will jump on. We'll kind of touch on that Morgan Riley conversation again. And we'll talk about a text I got earlier in the program about a specific tattoo. If you got a bad tattoo that you want to get rid of, where is it on your body and what is it? Name and location, please. We'll read those at the end of the program. It's Sportsnet today, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sportsnet today. Sportsnet 590 Japan. George Russick here for another 15 minutes or so. Straight ahead, we'll talk about a text we got earlier on in the program about a specific tattoo from somebody from my beautiful hometown of Niagara Falls. Read a couple of your texts as well. Do you have a tattoo on your body right now that you totally regret and want removed? Where is it? What is it? Name and location, please. We'll get those at the end of the program. But producer Sam McKee joining me here on the line. Sam, we had that great conversation about Morgan Riley with Luke Fox earlier on in the program. And I don't get why some of our listeners, and I love every one of you out there, thank you for listening, that they don't think Morgan Riley is going to get paid in unrestricted free agency. He's absolutely going to get his money. He makes $5 million right now. I know we all live in this little Toronto Maple Leafs bubble and don't really pay attention to the rest of the league. Well, some of the fan base does. But if Morgan Riley hits the free agent market, he's going to make $7 million minimum a season, Sam. That's just what the price is going to be for a guy like Morgan Riley.
No doubt. And you look at what he's 28 now. So sorry, 27 now. So this is sort of the time where you're on your trajectory. This is your prime. From basically 27 to 32, 33 is your prime. And he's going to get paid like he's in his prime. And that's, you know, that was kind of a longer bridge deal than he probably wanted, what Lou signed him for. And, you know, this is an aside. God bless Lou for the contracts that he signed to the Toronto Maple Leafs that set them up here for this window that they've done absolutely nothing with. But that contract was such a beautiful one, and it bridged him right to his age 27 season, and now he's looking at a huge payday, and he deserves it. Like, I saw somebody text in, say, like, oh, yeah, he's going to sign a similar contract to Muzzin. And it's like, well, Muzzin signed a contract when he was 31, right? Like, he's 5 years younger than Muzzin. There's a huge difference here. There's a huge difference in the way they skate, the durability. Morgan Riley plays every game. Like, I just can't picture a world in which he's not getting paid the big bucks.
And there's no question that some of the shine has come off Morgan Riley. Remember, Sam, we had the conversation of this guy potentially could be on Team Canada's roster at the Olympics a couple of years ago. Like, that was a real conversation that was being had on this radio station. But a guy who is a top three defenseman pretty much on any team in the league is going to get paid. That's just the way the league works. And I just don't see how the Leafs can let him walk for nothing, Sam. If I'm Kyle Dubas, I know that your job's in jeopardy here, and you need the team to win, and you need Morgan Riley here to potentially win not one, maybe two playoff series or get into the Stanley Cup playoffs first and foremost. But that would be horrendous asset management if the Leafs let him walk for nothing. Like, that's just inexcusable.
I completely agree with everything you're saying here, and I think it's a thing you need to either plug your nose and give him the big money or plug your nose and trade him. There's no, like, I don't think you can just do the thing that they've been doing for the past 5 years. So it's going to be a tough, and we talked about it yesterday, but like, if this puck drops in the regular season and he's unsigned, what then? We're just going to go through every press conference with him getting asked about it, every sort of situation with him getting asked about it. I don't know, man. I just think that it's just a really tough situation for Kyle Dubas to put himself and the Leafs and Morgan Riley in heading into this season.
Yeah, so much pressure on the Leafs. I asked Luke Fox about Sheldon Keefe, and obviously even the shine's a little off. Sheldon Keefe had that fantastic regular season here with the Leafs winning the North Division, but quite frankly, he was out-coached by Dom Ducharme in that first round. He refused to make the necessary adjustments, especially to the power play. And do you think there's a scenario where if this team gets slow off the gate, his job potentially can be in jeopardy? Because you don't really, you never want to talk about guys losing their jobs, but there is so much pressure on this team. Do you think Kyle Dubas would actually go down that road if this team starts slow out of the gate?
No, I think they're tied together here pretty much. And
I think you're right.
I'm not concerned. Like I've said to you before, man, I'm not concerned about the regular season with this team. They got too much talent on this team to really have a lot of struggles in the regular season unless somebody gets injured of their top guys like right away. I really have no sort of right after they lost to the Habs, I was talking about how they're going to be hard pressed to make the playoffs because I was sour, and I still am sour. Don't get me wrong here, but I've really kind of come around on the fact that they're going to be a good regular season team. I think they're going to be a top three in that Atlantic Division. They still have the top talent. They've brought in some younger guys, some younger legs, you know, half decent goaltending, the best defensive core they've had during this window. I don't think the regular season is what I'm worried about. So therefore, even if they were awful, I don't think anything's happening in season. Like if they don't make the playoffs, nothing's happening in season. It'll all be after the season. Like Dubas didn't fire Babcock, whatever, 2 years ago or however long that was ago in the world that we live in, the flat circle of time we live in. But he's not going to fire a mid-season and bring in someone else. Like, this is Dubas's guy. This is Dubas's man, right, who he wanted here. He's come up through the ranks with him. He's had him at every level. There's no way, in my opinion, that he's on the hot seat for this season. If it goes badly, next season is extremely hot. It's the hottest seat possible. But this year, they're going to be together and... Listen, I think they're going to make the playoffs not easily, but somewhat easily, and then it just comes back. That's why this year's so hard to get excited about, George. Just what are we doing? We're doing the exact same thing. You know, halfway through January, it's a set in stone that the Leafs are playing the Bruins in the first round of the playoffs, probably, and then we're just going to have to talk about it over and over and over and over and over, and away we go. That's what's going to happen. I'm so confident in this. Boston and Toronto are going to be fighting for the 2 and 3 slots in the Atlantic Division, and then we're going to go into the playoffs with the Leafs playing the Bruins or playing the Lightning and saying, can they get past the first round? And I probably think they won't. That's how it's going to go.
But is one round good enough?
No. But the thing is, it's like the goalposts have moved so much on this core. It's a Stanley Cup winning core. They've got the best core, one of the best young cores in the league. And now we're like, oh, if they could just find a way. This gritty underdog team to find a way to get past the first round. It's just the goalposts have moved so much. And I if they get past the first round, sure. But it's all about how it happens, right? Like if they beat the Bruins in the first round in a hard-fought series and they go to the second round, they play the Lightning and they lose in 7 games when a puck bounces in off someone's butt or something, I think it's different. You know, they beat the Bruins, get swept in the second round by the Lightning. It's a different story. It's just an all situational for me. It's all situational.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating season for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And you're right, there's still a lot of bitterness. A lot of Leaf fans out there are still sour on the Toronto Maple Leafs on how they went out in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. You want to have fun straight ahead to wrap up the show?
Love to.
I had this great text from my hometown of Niagara Falls about a specific tattoo. We'll talk about that. And some of the texts we're getting in are fantastic. If you have a tattoo that you regret, what is it? Where is it? Name and location. And if you can get it removed today, would you? We'll do that next to wrap up Sportsnet today. That's Sam. I'm George. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sportsnet today. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. My name is George Russick, here for another 5 minutes. Hey, you can win the Dauber Hockey Fantasy Guide Advantage and dominate your fantasy draft. Sunday on the Fantasy Show, you could win 2 Dauber Platinum subscriptions. Details at sportsnet.ca/590. Andy and show do a fantastic job to get you set for your fantasy football Sundays from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. and then some Inside the Line shows on at 10 a.m. You should probably listen to that too. But check out the Fantasy Show 8 a.m.'s right here, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Producer Sam McKee with me doing a fantastic job. And Sam, I got this text earlier on in the program. I don't know. Do you have any tattoos?
Nope. Tattoo list, buddy.
Yeah, me too.
Don't got the guts.
Okay, I appreciate your honesty. I've just never had the desire to it. Well, it all stems back to my childhood because my uncle has a lot of ink on his body, and it's bad tattoos, so I think it kind of scared me straight. Like, my uncle has, and this is my uncle's older, he had a tattoo of a 60s sex symbol, Brigitte Bardot, on his chest, Sam, and I always thought it was a bell.
I don't even know who that is.
Yeah, it was this, she was a sex symbol of the 60s. French actress, and I thought it was a bell instead of a woman. Like, that's how bad the tattoo looks now.
Jesus.
So, yeah, so, like, scared straight because of my uncle and his terrible tattoo. Got this text from Jimmy Cott from Niagara Falls. Good morning, George. I've been hesitant about sending this text to your forum, but I was hoping you could present this as a listener poll. When I was a teenager, I was a huge Cleveland Indians fan, Manny Ramirez, and I also played hockey for the Chippewa Merchants Junior C hockey team in the early 90s. So I decided to get the Chief Wahoo as a tattoo. I look at it now, and I'm embarrassed. What are your thoughts and your listener's thoughts on should I have it removed? Should he have that tattoo removed, Sam McKee?
Yeah, you gotta. You gotta. Like, listen, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, you're
if
you, a racist.
If you're
for
financially
that logo.
Able to have it done.
Yes. If, gotta do it.
I would say, yeah, it's probably a good idea. If,
and I'm
if
not
you're embarrassed
fault
about something, you should do something about it.
For sure. Like, it depends where it is. Like, every time you go to the pool, you got to take off your shirt. You got your the big Chief Wahoo. I mean, I'm not going to fault the guy for getting it. Obviously, huge fan, like, played a lot of hockey, probably was a great tattoo, you know, back in the day. You're fired up about it. I mean, it's never the logo's never not been racist. It's just been called into question in the last little bit, and it's obviously they're changing their team name. That is a 1,000% have to get removed if you're financially able to. Just have to.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. You gotta kind of have to get that thing done. We got a couple great texts too here, and thanks, Jimmy, for that honesty. And yeah, I think you should maybe look into that. Matt from Toronto, this is great. I got a tattoo of the Vegas Golden Knights logo on my leg during their cup run. I was a fan for like 2 weeks. I like that. He loved the Vegas Golden Knights so much, he decided to get a tattoo during their Stanley Cup run. Here we go. I'm going to get a tattoo on there. There's a good one of this gentleman. Are you familiar with what a tramp stamp is, Sam?
Yes, of course.
There's a gentleman who texted in who said he got a tattoo on the lower part of his back and super aggressive. And then all of a sudden, this is from years ago. All of a sudden, he's like, why do I have this on my lower back? I should absolutely get it removed. You should have got that thing removed probably about 10 years ago, sir, after having...
You should have got your brain removed when you decided to do that.
Yeah, like, I think that's great. Hi, my name is Dustin. I have a shocker tattoo on the back of my right leg. I'm not going to explain to you what that means. I have to tell my kids it's a peace sign. I need it covered up one day.
Oh, boy. Yikes.
That's classy. I am not going to explain what that is. I'm just going to say that is a phenomenal tattoo. One more here before we go. Worst tattoo ever. It was a shamrock too. The gentleman who got it on his lower back, just to double check, just to double back on that, it was a shamrock on his lower back.
Yikes. Just yikes. That's all I got for you on that.
Yeah. It's a peace sign. On my lower leg. That's what I tell my kids. Sam, great job today, pal.
Thank you. Really classy
way to end our show.
Oh, yeah, great. Just great stuff.
Two letters short of class, but that's fine. You're off tomorrow, right?
I am.
Okay, so you'll be back Thursday and Friday. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for crafting such a great show for us today.
No problem. No problem, buddy.
I know hopefully I was average enough to get us through these three hours. That's it for us. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Great job, Sam. Great job, Lance. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye.